It is 4 o'clock, and we call our meeting to order. So we have a roll call, Danielle.
Yes. Vice Chair Latchford.
Here.
Commissioner Mason.
Here.
Commissioner Newell.
Here.
Commissioner Salverson.
I think we still have a speaker problem there.
Yeah. Chair Beasley.
Here.
Thank you.
No, I think we can see Kathy, so we better record her as here. Okay. David Newell, could you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance today?
Sure thing.
Thank you.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dave, for that speedy approach. Do we have anyone online for call to audience, Danielle?
Mr. Chair, I have not received any comments.
Okay. Then why don't we move past that and go to staff liaison reports?
Well, good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Dave Gephardt doing the staff liaison report for you this evening. So several items to report on. I know I wanted to address the audit officially. I know I was kind of discussing it a little bit prior to the meeting, but auditors came in first week of November. They were here on site for 3 days. I think they spent the fourth day, Thursday, as far as I'm aware, taking some of the work back to the office, to their office, and not actually being on site, but still working on our engagement. As all reports are that the audit went fine. They didn't have any management letter comments or anything that they noted that was of great concern. We still had a couple minor adjustments that we discussed with them that we knew that we needed to make. So we've been conversing back and forth and in contact with them over the last couple weeks. We are kind of, just to make you all aware, we're kind of drafting financial statements in tandem with them. So they're working on our financial statements, but we're also working on our financial statements. And we're going to, you know, see how far we can get in terms of completing that draft. And if we need them to kind of fill in the gaps, that they've agreed to do so. There are certain, you know, items, pension disclosures and whatever, because it's our first year just setting up the capper. There's a lot of tables and things. It's really a time intensive process. But once it's set up, the good thing is then moving forward, then you don't have as much work to do. You're just basically updating. And that's kind of where we're at. We're trying to get that initial setup, that setup completed. And of course, just pushing as hard as we can to do so. And if we can get all the way there, great. And if we can't, we are going to probably fall back on the auditors to fill in those gaps and provide those inputs that we need just to make sure that we have a complete CAFR. And the goal, again, is just as it always has been, is to complete that CAFR by December 31, 6 months after our fiscal year. So that's the audit. I'd like to discuss the water bond refunding as well. That is actually going to council tomorrow night. There's a couple options available to us. And so I kind of wanted to discuss that just kind of at a real high level. But the point of this is, of course, to save money. And the way where interest rates are currently in our current environment, we believe that we can save a little over $200,000, maybe more than that, And so, but we'll wait and see. But there's a couple options, so I want to discuss those options. One is just a typical revenue bond issuance that we could utilize our underwriters, Stifel, to issue and sell on our behalf. And the other is a what's called a private placement offering, where we would enter into an agreement with a financial institution directly, and they would basically loan us the money at a very low interest rate. Currently, we are thinking it's going to be less than 1.5%, but again, the market will kind of determine that. And I should say with the private placement offering, our Stifel, the company that we're working with, they have agreed to actually do an RFP and place that out in the marketplace and receive bids. So we will select, if we decide that the private placement market is advantageous to the revenue bond issuance market, we will actually place that out to bid. In fact, it's already out on the street, and we will select the lowest bidder who's providing us the best deal. And that should increase our savings, obviously. So that's kind of the status update on that. We're hoping council will approve that. There will be a presentation tomorrow evening at the council meeting, and so we're hoping to be able to move forward on that issue in short order.
David, what is the size of the bond?
Hold on, let me pull that.
Let me jump in and say you can't really have a discussion. That question is okay, but
okay.
it's supposed to be a report, so.
Yeah, no, this is the size of the bond total. We're looking at about $5.6 million. It's a very small issuance, and we're refunding actually three separate issuances with that refunding. So, any other questions on that? Did I hear someone? Sorry. Okay. Last thing I wanted to discuss was at the last BFC meeting, it was requested that we provide an update on the town's investments. And so I'd like to bring you up to date on where we're at on that. As of June 30th, 2020, the town had about $45 million invested with PFM, which consisted of about $2 million in their money market account and the balance invested in various asset classes, which include U.S. treasuries, supranational agency bonds, collateralized mortgage obligations, federal agency bonds, corporate notes, and CDs and asset-backed securities. And 41% of that $43 million was invested in U.S. treasuries, another 18.5% was invested in corporate notes, and almost 15% was in asset-backed securities. So total of those three classes alone made up the balance, the lion's share of our investment portfolio. The average annual yield on the PFM portfolio last fiscal year was 2.49%. And then the town, in addition to the PFM portfolio, the town had an additional $8.34 million invested with the Arizona, the state treasurer in the Pool 5 LGIP fund as of June 30th, 2020. And the average annual yield in that fund last fiscal year was 1.6%. So that's last fiscal year. Now, to bring you up to speed, as of September 30th, the town had about $49.27 million invested with PFM, which consisted of about $10.2 million in their money market account. So, you know, basically 20% was in the money market, and the balance, about $39 million, was invested in various asset classes, which have already been described. About 35% of the $39 million was invested in U.S. treasuries. 16% was invested in corporate notes, and about 11.5% was invested in asset-backed securities. The average quarterly yield of the PFM portfolio for the quarter ending September 30th was 2.5%. The town had an additional almost $12 million, $11.96 million invested with the Arizona Treasurer and the Pool 5 LGIP Fund as of September 30th, 2020. And the average quarterly yield in the fund for the quarter was 0.17%. So you can see the difference on the LGIP. They went from last fiscal year earning 1.6% to last quarter earning 0.17%. You know, just some general comments here. I think generally speaking, what you're going to start seeing is the town's yield in its investment portfolios beginning to drop in the PFM funds and as more securities mature, and obviously in the LGIP fund as well. Even comparing September 30th to June 30th, a significantly higher percentage of the portfolio is sitting in the PFM money market fund, which is, you know, I already mentioned that it was almost 20%, or actually 21%. As of June 30th, it was less than 5%. So you see this cash buildup in the PFM fund as securities mature. And the reason why, you know, is because our investment firm doesn't want to tie the town's money up for several years for, you know, such low returns, because there is such a flat yield curve. There's not really a benefit to the time that, you know, if we wanted to invest in something on a, you know, on a 3-year duration or something like that, I mean, we're just not being, we don't feel like we're being compensated adequately for that. And we're hoping that at some point that yield curve will return to more of a normal type curve and not be so flat. And then we can take advantage of that when that happens. So basically what we're trying to do is keep the portfolio extremely short, certainly looking for opportunities as they exist and as they arise, but waiting for the yield curve to kind of change, to not be so flat, and to get into, take advantage of the new environment when that happens. So I know that's kind of a brief presentation or a brief update there, but certainly willing to entertain any questions that you may have regarding the strategy or anything that's been presented or discussed this evening.
David, no, we can't have that kind of a discussion on a report. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just if you have any questions on anything you asked, just for clarification on a report. Thank you.
Okay. Yep.
You're a spoil sport, Tobin.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Fire away.
And hopefully Tobin will let me answer. David, notwithstanding the investment report, which I understood and everything, thank you very much for that, but when you first started working with the investment houses, you wanted to reserve your thoughts and comments about their performance and everything. Have you had any more thoughts and consideration about our investment advisors? Are you feeling comfortable? Are you satisfied?
You know, Mr. Latchford, Commissioner Latchford, Vice Chair Latchford, and members of the commission, you know, I think it's still a little bit early. I think we're just in a challenging environment right now. So I think and I guess that from that standpoint, I am comfortable. You know, I think I'd like to see how they perform in maybe a different environment right now. It's just, I think our strategy is sound. We actually did sell our lowest rated corporate note, and that was a recent sale. So I think I am starting to get some of that feedback and some of those, I guess, some of those recommendations from PFM. But up to now, up to this point, I've only had quarterly meetings with them. And so it's kind of been a little bit difficult to kind of get up to speed. I think the year-end process has helped me in that regard. They are outperforming the state treasurer. So I think from that standpoint, we are meeting our goals. But I guess, you know, I guess this is where it becomes important to monitor performance over time and see where things go, because, you know, it's a little bit concerning to me. And I understand the strategy, but it is a little bit concerning to me that we have 20% of our portfolio in a money market fund, which is not going to really yield much at all, if anything. I do get the strategy there again, but we are going to start to see returns take a drop off the cliff, so to speak, as our, you know, the different investments that we have in the classes, as those mature, as those, you know, we're not obviously buying a lot right now. And, you know, when you compare, when you add what we have in the money market and fund to what we have in U.S. Treasuries, both of those markets, again, they're just not yielding anything right now. So that's a significant part of our portfolio. So we're going to see a really significant drop off in investment earnings and hope that the market does turn around at some point. But I want to see their performance moving forward, how they take advantage of certain opportunities as they present themselves, you know, how they shift money into various asset classes that may be may present opportunities, because this is just a real challenging environment.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks very much, Dan. I just wanted to catch up with you there and see to get your thoughts. That's all I had, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yeah, David, quick comment. I found that report very helpful, and I hope we can get those on a frequent basis going forward. And I wouldn't hold my breath for interest rates to go up. The Fed has already acknowledged that they're going to keep them close to zero for a long time. So not a long time, could be several years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The quarterly update that PFM provided to us, their estimate, just to bring the commission up to what PFM is anticipating, they believe that the Fed will keep their rates down to zero until 2023 at the earliest, and perhaps longer than that. But, you know, the Fed chairman has not, he says, I think he said the quote, "We're not even thinking about raising rates. It's not on our radar in the near future at all." I guess the bright side, if you want to look at it, the glass half full approach, is that we don't have negative rates, which you're seeing in Europe right now, where a lot of their government bonds and treasuries and things that they issue are actually negative, which is almost incomprehensible. But there's a number of nations in Europe that have negative rates right now on their investments. So we haven't reached that point, and hopefully we don't get to that point, but this is just where we're at, and I think it's challenging on everyone.
Any other questions for David?
No.
Okay. I think you have the floor, sir, for our regular agenda.
Can we read item number one into the record, Danielle?
Review and approval of the October 20th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes.
Are there any comments on the minutes that were published? May I hear a motion to accept the minutes as they are?
Motion.
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor of approval of those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any dissent? Okay. Those minutes are approved as published. Okay, David or Wendy, we got her on board for the update for financials. Great. You're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commission members. Can everyone hear me okay and see me okay? I'm having a little bit of kind of cutting out on my computer. I'm not sure what that's all about, a little bit of slowness. So just bear with me there. But I'm going to go ahead and see, share my screen with you if I can so that we can see. There we go. This is the one we want. Okay. Can everyone see the PowerPoint okay, hopefully,
yep.
Slideshow?
Yep.
Okay, great. All right. Okay, so thank you very much. This is our financial update through September. So we've got one quarter now under our belts. I'm pleased to report that things continue to look very positive in all of our funds. So again, a good news item for this evening. Jumping right in, as usual, we will be covering the general fund, highway fund, and community center fund. The general fund on the revenue side, we've got our major sources there off to the left, kind of looking at budget compared to actuals, and then where we're at percentage of budget, and then the current year-end estimates through September. Local sales tax, we are at just under $5.3 million through September. That's 29% of our budget, just over 29%. We have actually, at this point through September, we feel confident enough to have bumped up those year-end estimates over budget by about $100,000. That's due to several areas that are trending really well, including construction, retail, our utility sales tax is up, and remote collections, as you can imagine, are just through the roof. So it's kind of a bundle of categories that are performing well. And we'll keep watching those, but I think it's safe to say that if anything, that year-end estimate could continue to increase. State shared revenues are looking fine as well. We're at just over $3 million in actuals through September, or about 23% of the budget. We are estimating those to come in about on budget. I mentioned last month that we've been watching the state shared sales taxes, and we'll just kind of keep our eye on those. They were looking a little low. And so we'll just watch those and keep adjusting those if we need to, based on trend. Charges for services, no surprise there. Those continue to trend below budget. You know, obviously our aquatic user fees are in there, our parks and rec class revenues are in there, fare box revenues, you know, just some areas that have been hit pretty hard by COVID. So we are estimating those to come in just a bit under budget, and we'll keep watching those pretty closely too. Licenses and a very positive category at this point, both on the commercial and residential side. We are continuing to blow away our budget on single-family residential permits. We budgeted 225 this year, and we are over 100 through September. And I believe we issued about 40 more permits in October. So we brought up that year-end estimate considerably. Right now, that budget overage is just tied to some one-time commercial that we've been seeing, but the residential, as I mentioned, is trending above budget too. And so same as with the local sales tax, I would be comfortable stating that if anything, that year-end estimate could go up as well. And then we've got all of our other revenues in the all other category. Those include such things as our grants, other intergovernmental revenue, including RTA reimbursements for transit, some transfers in to the general funds, some miscellaneous revenues, and then obviously the big ticket item there with the grant revenues is the CARES funding, the $5.3 million that we have received thus far. So we have our year-end estimate at just over $8.5 million. We have that coming in over budget. That's primarily due to the interest income revenues that are trending very well at this point, and so we've felt comfortable bumping up those year-end estimates. In total, general fund revenues, we are at about 36% of budget through September. That sounds really high, but again, the CARES funding is in that amount. So total year-end estimate, about $44,066,000. And again, that overage is primarily due to the permit revenues that I've talked about, a little bit of the sales tax, and then the interest income as well. On the expenditure side for general fund, personnel is at about 18% of budget, or about $5.2 million. We are estimating about $260,000 in savings there, The actuals are slightly below budget right now just due to timing of payroll. And then the year-end estimated savings are due to some vacancies that we've seen thus far. So brought that down a bit. On the O&M side, operations and maintenance, actuals are a little over 2 million or about 17% of budget for September. That sounds low, but that's pretty typical still for the first quarter. And also just departments being, very careful and monitoring their spending, just considering the situation. We are expecting to see a little bit of budget savings there, possibly not quite spending all of the set aside that we've had available to us as a result of the Arizona CARES funding. So some of those initiatives that we have laid out just because of timing, some of that may spill into next fiscal year. Capital, again, kind of same situation with O&M. Actuals are pretty low year to date, but again, departments kind of ramping up that spending slowly. We have primarily some grant funded vehicles in there. We have some IT items, computers, mobile data computers, that kind of thing, and some parks and recreation capital improvements too. So those will start to ramp up. We do still have those coming in on budget at this point. And then obviously the transfers out. Those are the budgeted transfers to our capital fund and our debt service fund. We have already made the transfer to the debt service. And then when you get the October financials, you will see 1/3 of the transfers to capital on there. So we do those every 4 months. So that first transfer you will see in October. So obviously we are anticipating that category to come in on budget. In total for general fund expenditures, we're estimating just over $44,064,000. And again, slightly below budget, just due to some of those vacancy savings that we're looking at, as well as some possible O&M savings. Here's the chart for the general fund through September. On the revenue side there, you see the 15.6 compared to the 10.2. Keep in mind that the CARES funding is in there. That's really the bulk of that difference. On the expenditure side, the $8.2 million spent year-to-date this year compared to $9.5 last year. Some of the differences there are the timing of payrolls, that's A, and then B is the PSPRS payment. So last year, we actually did a lump sum payment to PSPRS towards the unfunded liability. This year, we've decided, just in terms of being conservative, cash flow, that kind of thing, we're going to go ahead and do monthly transfers for that $500,000. So we have started those in November. And so beginning with the November financials, you will start to see those in the actuals. And those will come to $500,000 by the end of the fiscal year. Right now, our year-to-date surplus is $7.4 million. What's driving that, again, is the CARES funding. The year-end estimate at this point, we had a budgeted deficit of about $1.2 million, planned use of fund balance. And I'm excited to announce that we are looking at a surplus now of about $2,000. And obviously that, we'll keep watching that. That's going to change. Changing for the better is my hope there. Estimated ending fund balance, we're looking at about $21.4 million in the general fund. And just for reference, that's about 48% of the budgeted expenditures, with our policy being 25%. That is the general fund. Moving on to the highway fund, things pretty standard there. I don't really think there's a whole lot of changes from last month, but the HERF revenues, the highway user revenues, are trending well through September. Those are just over 900,000. We are expecting those to come in just a smidge over budget. They're trending pretty well. So we'll keep watching those and adjust if we need to, but so far so good. The grant revenues, that's probably the biggest change from last month. Those actuals, they may kind of stand out to you at zero, but what that really is personnel reimbursements for contract administration on the LaToya Roadway widening project. That project was accelerated. And so basically, we've already received all those reimbursements that we were due last fiscal year. So we are not planning any more reimbursements. There are not any more in the pipeline. And so those actuals have been brought to zero. And that's always a bit of an estimate in terms of those reimbursements. I mean, it really just depends on the timing of the roadway project. And because it was accelerated, that's the reason for that variance. On the expenditure side, The expenditures are just under $300,000 through September, or just under 8% of the budget. We have a large Lambert Lane overlay project budgeted in that fund, as well as our payment preservation budget in there. And some of those things just take a while to ramp up. The pavement preservation, you should start seeing those fall treatments come in the actuals, and then the second half of that in the spring. And then the Lambert Lane overlay project, I do believe I have seen the requisitions and the purchase order requests start to come in for those. But I believe that project will be completed in the spring of next year. We are anticipating the expenditures to come in just a bit over $100,000 in personnel savings. And that is tied to the grant revenues that I was talking about. So we do have some temporary personnel that are in that fund that have been tied to some of that contract administration. They were still on board after the projects, you know, were still wrapping up and tackling some punch items and that kind of thing, punch list items. And so they've been on board just a little bit longer, but we are expecting to see some personnel savings in there as a result of the roadway project being completed. Here's the chart for the highway fund. Things pretty standard there. The revenues, the major difference there, the $900,000 for the current year versus $1.1 last year. You may recall last fiscal year, all cities and towns received an amount of about $200,000 in one-time highway user funding. That's really the main difference there. Expenditures, just a bit under budget. Again, that could be timing of payroll and the particular capital projects that are budgeted in the fund. Currently, year-to-date through September, we have a surplus in the fund of about $620,000. We are looking at a planned deficit of about $224,000. Just for reference, in the highway funds, let's see if I got that. Our budget for the deficit was about $160,000. So just the result of those grant revenues and then the associated personnel expenditures is that variance there. But our estimated ending fund balance at this point, just under $600,000 in the highway fund. Moving on to the community center fund, our contracted revenues are trending as expected. They're at about $750,000 a year to date. Obviously, there's seasonality in those figures. Just looking at a comparison to the first quarter of last fiscal year, they are up about $157,000 or 26.5% compared to the first quarter of last year. That is all golf, and from what I can tell, primarily outside play. Town operating revenues are below budget. We had mentioned this last month and probably the month before. Obviously, with the facility being closed, those are going to be impacted. We have brought down those year-end estimates, and we'll continue to watch those closely. The half-cent sales tax is still trending as expected. Obviously, in this fund is just getting the half-cent, so it's not going to see any benefit from the construction sales tax or the utility sales tax, which is 4%. But it is going to see some benefit from the retail and remote collections. So we'll watch those, and hopefully we can bump up the year-end estimate in this fund, too. On the expenditure side, contracted expenditures are also trending as expected. They're at about $1.2 million year-to-date, or 26.6% of budget. Comparing to last year, nothing real exciting there. They're about flat, just a smidge under, a little over 2% in terms of difference there compared to last year. And then the town operating expenditures, same situation with the revenues. Obviously, we're going to see some shortfalls in the revenue side, but hopefully we can offset a lot of that with expenditures for both personnel and O&M for town operating as a result of the facility being closed. Here's the chart for the community center fund. Comparing to last fiscal year, pretty flat, really. The revenues, $1.4 million, flat to last year. And essentially what that is growth in golf revenues, making up for the shortfall in town operating revenues is what you're seeing there. The expenditures, just a smidge under where they were last year. That's could be a little bit of savings on the contractor side and then the town operating expenditures as well. Year to date, the fund has a deficit of just under $93,000. We were looking at, for reference, in the community center fund, let's see. planned surplus of about 221,000. And we are currently looking at a surplus of about $2,000 at this point, just a little over 2,000. So just, you know, some impacts that we're seeing from the primarily the town operating side, actually. And that's going to bring us to an estimated ending fund balance of about 900,000, 907,000 at this point. And again, we'll continue to watch that fund too and make adjustments as we need to, but things positive in that fund as well. And with that, we'll take any questions you may have.
Do you have any questions for Wendy?
I have a question. It's Kathy. So my question, Wendy, to you has to do with the licenses and permits, where we're like, you've already increased the year-end forecast by 20%. So my question is that due to conservative forecasting, or would it be possible for us to have known that we were going to have that much of an increase in the new permits?
Chair, I'm sorry, Commissioner Silverson, that is due to conservative forecasting. You know, obviously these budgets were built back in the March, April timeframe, and really not having a whole lot of data to go on, we needed to be very careful with this category. We were looking at originally budgeting, I think, about 300 single family residential permits. And we did bring that down to 225 is what we ended up budgeting instead. We also pulled back on some estimates for commercial projects, not knowing if those would be put on hold with COVID, people getting nervous and that kind of thing. And so we just wanted to be super careful in that category. But obviously with low rates, I mean, my gosh, both sides of the house are just rocking and rolling. So I'm glad that they've been coming in higher than what we anticipated. But yes, that is all a result of just really conservative forecasting and wanting to be very careful.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions, if I could.
Fire away, John.
Can we go back to the general fund just for a second? CARES funding has been recorded, I think it said in the month of August, and that's been fully recognized for the $5.3 million. And I know that we have OB Safe Steps Off program off and running. And there we're going to be dispersing some of those funds to third parties, which I believe we've already done. And do we know how much we're anticipating of that funding that will be distributed to third parties? Do we have any indication of that?
Vice Chair Latchford, so for that overall business assistance program, we did budget $1 million for that category. That not only includes the assistance to businesses, but it includes consulting services and a few other things that fall kind of in that overall realm of business assistance. We have distributed year to date, I believe, just over 200,000 in direct reimbursements to businesses for PPE and marketing and that sort of thing. So, yeah, those are we're getting those requests in and processing those as quickly as we can, and we're getting a good number of them. So,
gotcha. Yeah. All right, well, that's good to know. I was wondering, the $1 million, is that projected into our year-end forecast when we're looking at the general fund?
Vice Chair Letchford, yes, it is.
It is, okay, that's good. The performance of the revenues coming into the general fund, of course, are a lot stronger than we had originally anticipated with our budget, which is really good news. I noted that the state recently put out a document indicating where they thought that the revenue sources were going to trend over the next 6 months, remainder of the fiscal year, and they're being very bullish. Have we changed our thought about what the next 6 months is going to bring? Are you hearing anything from some of your other sources or maybe some of your colleagues at other towns? I was quite surprised at how positive the state is. This report came out in October, October 20th, I believe it was. Have any one of you heard anything to the contrary or supportive?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Latchford. I'll tell you that my colleagues have the same reaction that we do, which is like, wow. It's a little unanticipated. And, you know, when we were all going through this, remember, it was so unknown, right? We didn't have any data. We didn't know what was going on. It was just, and I would say that we're all kind of in this, wow, we didn't think this was a place where we were going to be. Right. So it, you know, like I said, a good thing. I think what we've learned is that, folks are still spending, and what's seems to be going on is they're staying at home. So in some cases, they're reducing their expenditures in other areas. So they're then using those to pay. We still get our online, you know, everybody's ordering online. So what they might not have been doing, going to the stores, they're doing more online. So we're still getting that revenue. And as Wendy mentioned, you know, our biggest hit at this point is still the bed tax and the bar and restaurant. Right. And we are seeing a slight uptick in bed tax. It's a little kind of like it's now sort of the, okay, I guess that's where things are going. But we have the same response that you do right now.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to their crystal ball being clearer than mine, and I'm sure they're on top of it. But I was quite taken aback about that. And that's good news. I mean, I don't want to minimize it. So my next question just goes to the golf operations. And we mentioned this last month that our contractor is now reporting that their merchandise and other sales are continuing to run significantly behind the budget. And we weren't quite sure what that revenue was and why. Have we had any further information about that? I noted that through September 30th, they're forecasted to finish 58% below budget. And I don't even know what that category is. Does anybody have any idea of why they're so far behind budget so early?
Vice Chair Latchford, I believe Bernie Eaton, the general manager for the facility, is on the call, or at least I show he's on the call, and he can certainly speak to some of the details in those categories further. Obviously, you know, some clear assumptions there are that COVID is impacting those categories likely, the merchandise sales. Obviously, the other big hit is food and beverage. Those are the two areas that you can see, obviously, you mentioned that are being hit hard. But in terms of kind of diving into more of those details, I would probably defer to him on that if he's able to answer to that or speak to that a bit. Let's see, I see that he's on. He looks like he's muted with his camera off, but
yes, was it again? I want to make sure he's unmuted.
It does look like he's still muted. If he is having difficulties unmuting, there we go.
Okay, can you hear me, Wendy?
We can. Yes, Bernie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. To the question, we've been, you know, COVID has had a significant impact on some ancillary spending and merchandise sales. We have not hit our in-season spending, where we anticipate some growth in the merchandise sales area. The other categories are rental clubs, things of that nature that are impacted with tourism and things of that nature. So those numbers are trending below where we originally projected. We are exceeding budget in many other revenue categories, and overall through the first quarter are exceeding budget expectations.
Yes, thank you for that. That's good information to know going forward. Is this a recoverable deficit? In other words, do you foresee that it's something that might be recoverable by the end of the year, or our fiscal year, I should say, or is this something that's lost?
We anticipate a slight recovery moving forward. I'm not going to commit to a full recovery, but you know, hopefully a significant portion of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate that. Let's see, Mr. Chairman, I have just one little housekeeping matter for the golf operations, if I could, and we're confident. We're lucky to have manager here. On the second worksheet for the golf operations, C2, under the budget column, it appears that we're missing, this is just clearly clerical, I'm pretty sure, we're missing about $1.1 million in expenses. And I think it's under maintenance. Right now, the report is clearly showing a very significant and material unfavorable variance to budget, but I think that's because the budget's understated. I'm kind of guessing that it's probably the utility. And this is just budget. I don't have any concerns about the actual. So this doesn't have an actual input. It's just a matter of creating a significant unfavorable variance between the budget and the forecast. So just a housekeeping to alert you to that, so maybe we can correct it and not have to get excited when we see it every month.
Thank you, Vice Chair Lechtford. We will take a look at those numbers and adjust if we need to. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes all of my questions. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, John. Anybody else have any questions?
Just one question. Have we started or done any progress on the irrigation project?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Mason. We are out on an RFP for the irrigation designer right now, so we should be making that selection. We expect that to be a two-month project to get all of our irrigation drawings, and then we'll have better cost estimates so that we can then proceed with the bidding process. So we're on schedule.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Jacobs, does that cover both golf courses?
We're going to do the irrigation design for both at the same time. It just makes sense because they're hooked and tied, and, you know, we'll bid one course at a time, but at least we'll have the whole thing designed, and, you know, they'll tie in controllers and, you know, all of that kind of thing. And then we can break it up. They'll then be able to tell us which pieces need to be as part of the first process, you know, the first project, and which ones maybe could wait until we do the second course.
So then you don't really expect to start spending money until when? February, March?
Next month on the designer. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in terms of the actual construction, the big dollar.
Oh, correct. We do not anticipate, you know, shovels in the dirt, so to speak, until mid-May at the earliest, maybe as late May. you know, we want to take advantage of that summer season into where we would ordinarily do the overseeding for that construction window.
Do we have any idea of what the impact on the water usage would be when the new system is fully in?
I believe in our, I'd have to go back and take a look at our formulas, but I believe that we conservatively estimated 10 or 15% savings. I'd have to go back. Could be better. But that's probably pretty fair.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on this?
I was wondering if to make maybe one request. On the spreadsheet where we show the sales tax actuals comparison from one fiscal year to the prior, could we add the state shared revenues to that, or do you want to come up with another spreadsheet? I think it'd be beneficial to see, to be able to compare actuals from current fiscal year with prior.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Yeah, we can definitely take a look at that. I can see the value in that, so we'll give that some thought. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Good camera. Anything else?
I have one question, two actually. The first is going back to golf, if Bernie is still on, perhaps he can answer this. Is the it looks like some of our recurring fees in revenues, such as member dues and cart fees, seem to be trending much more than 25% of budget at this point. And I was wondering if there are if we're anticipating slowdowns in those categories moving forward. Like your monthly dues are you know, trending at a quarter, if that was to continue, would be over $920,000. And your forecast is still calling for $8. Is there a reason you're anticipating that to slow down a bit?
We need to update the forecast in the tab. We are anticipating being above. Right now, our membership base is at 269 versus 245 last year. So we are trending better than where we anticipated to be at this time. And that impacts the member, the cart fee area, and the membership line as well.
Okay. So we're going to see as we move forward with the October, we'll say that what we have now is projected is actually pretty conservative to what you're anticipating moving forward.
Correct.
Okay. Final question, just so I can be clear, changing your corporate name again, I'm kind of getting confused how often you guys have been changing your name. Are we stuck with Indigo Golf Partners, or is there going to be a third or fourth reiteration of name changing going on?
We are finished moving with any name changes.
And that probably doesn't have anything to do with the financial update. So thanks.
I suppose, Mr. Chairman, while we have a representative from the golf company here, I'm really impressed with the performance of the golf revenue being so far ahead of last year. Can you give us some insight as to what you think may be some of the elements creating that success? Or is there things that you've done specifically? Because it is an impressive result so far for the first quarter.
Certainly, yes, Mr. Vice Chairman. There has been a small impact. Obviously, COVID has had a small impact on revenue growth. The last figures we saw from the National Golf Foundation were golf in Arizona up about approximately 18 to 20%. We are showing significantly better growth than that with the the programs and marketing that we've put in place, increase in memberships. We've been able to drive more public rounds of golf through our best rate guarantee with our loyalty app program, where we are trying to move more players off of third-party booking sites and onto our database and our programs by offering a better rate through our app. In the first 4 months, we've been able to have close to 700 downloads of our loyalty app. So we are moving players into our platform, which reduces the number of trade times and complimentary rounds that we have. The golf course conditions have received rave reviews online and from the membership. So when you combine our programs with improved golf course playing conditions, we have a very good reputation in the town, and that we believe that is driving players to our facility and through our website.
So to your point, are you feeling that the growth is coming from people who reside in the town, that is Oro Valley, or are you seeing an increase outside of the town?
We believe we're seeing growth on both sides, not only from within the community, but from outside the community as well.
So it's pretty broad-based, huh? Interesting. Now, allow me just to ask, what's the name of your app?
It is El Conquistador Golf.
Oh, okay. You'd think I'd know that. I'm sorry. I was just taking advantage, Mr. Chairman. I return to Florida.
Got your clubs warmed up, John?
Yeah, they're never warm.
Do we have any other questions?
I want to thank the gentleman from the golf club for being here and giving us this update. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's been helpful to us. And thank you very much for the presentation and bringing us up to date in general.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair.
The next item on our agenda is the review and discussion action on town financial and budgetary policy. David, I guess that's your bailiwick. What is your requirement at the end of our discussion today?
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't really have a requirement, I guess, per se. I have a couple suggested motions that I've included in your packet this evening. You know, I think the hope was certainly to get a recommendation from the commission this evening, and what that whether that recommendation is to is to recommend the policies to as being approved to the council, or recommend the council to approve the policies in their current state and form, or with any modifications and adjustments that the commission may choose to include this evening. So so that's really that's what the intent is. I think to stay on track, that I think we kind of tentatively had set this meeting as being kind of the final meeting that the commission would, that we kind of wrap up this project, this process that we've been going through, so that we could make a recommendation supported certainly by the commission to council at the December 2nd council meeting. Now, whether or not it needs to get pushed back or whatever, that is certainly up to you all as commissioners to decide whether you think that the policies need some additional work, that we're missing some significant components and pieces to them to make them complete or not. So.
How will this presentation be made to the council on December 7th?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, my intent was to obviously present the policies that you had recommended as being approved. And I believe Vice Chair Latchford, I've heard the, you know, and I think maybe another, maybe Commissioner Mason made this as well. I can't remember, but the recommendation that we have some sort of crosswalk or some sort of tie-in between the current policies and the recommended policies so that the council could easily make the transition from the current policies in their form to the new policies that are being recommended and see how the, you know, if, you know, if there's a policy in the current policies, you know, the numbering scheme that is A1 and there's something specific in there, see how that is either included or not in the new policies that are recommended to council for adoption. But the adoption process would include a resolution. And so basically, as we have historically, when the council approves policies, whether they're financial or otherwise, there's a resolution that that kind of is attached to it. So they're approving the resolution and then the policies are basically an attachment to that resolution. Hopefully that answers your question.
And this is an expectation that it will be done at one meeting.
Can you repeat that? Because I'm not sure.
The expectation is that the presentation and the discussion and council approval or not will be done at one meeting.
Yeah,
no, Mr. Chairman, I think for this, because it took you all a number of meetings, I think we'd be irresponsible if we didn't schedule a study session with them.
Yeah.
To go through and, you know, go through the conversation that, you know, several council members certainly have been able to participate, but you know, they relied on you to really dig into it. And we'd like to spend a few minutes to go over what they are and the why. And as Dave mentioned, you know, make those ties and address how we incorporated input from the Budget and Finance Commission and that sort of thing. So, no, I think we'll want to take our time again and make sure that there's plenty of opportunity to address issues before it goes, you know, for a final vote.
I'm glad to hear that because there's a lot of stuff here.
A lot.
Yeah. And significant changes from what the town had before. So I think they need to know what it is and why. Good.
So do you plan to do some kind of a summary for them, walking them through that says, you know, so in some cases, the policies just were not robust enough. In other cases, I think you do things a certain way and you've updated the policies to reflect that. You know, you've got different changes, I think, for the different policies, but maybe walking them through the before and the after and our thought, including our thought processes on those might be helpful.
And I think a well-crafted staff report on this is a good way to set that stage and the, you know, kind of given that background information. So we don't necessarily have to go blow by blow as we did here with this commission, but absolutely.
David, maybe you can walk us through what we have right now.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. The major change, so there are several changes. I think I tried to highlight them in my memorandum in your packet this evening. But basically, in a nutshell, I've added three additional policies that the town has not had and it does not currently have in its current financial policy set. So those policies specifically are internal controls, grants, and accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. So those are included for you this evening, policy number 1-11, 1-12, and 1-13. Additionally, there were some a number of comments that you all provided, to me, modifications. Many of them were minor. Some of them were a little more significant. I think, just as an example, one of the more I would qualify as being more significant, I added a section in the investment policy on banking services and a shock test, which I believe we had in our current investment policy, but had not been included in prior iterations. Other than that, there was a policy, and again, it's in our current policy set, but I in my review process, I didn't see that we had adequately covered this in prior drafts that you've reviewed, but dealing with transfers as to what is what requires council approval for a transfer between departments or between funds, et cetera, when we're moving money around in between the different functions and departments of the city and funds of the city, what requires council approval and what does not. Or even contingency. I think contingency reallocation was already in there, but transfers between funds was not. So I wanted to address that. And other than that, I would say, I would qualify most of the other, the other changes really being pretty minor in scope. I did add a table of contents, and then as I was reviewing the, just preparing for the evening or, the meeting this evening, noticed that the table of contents is pretty useless since the policies are not paginated. So that's another change that I needed to make and made that on the draft. Unfortunately, you don't see that change, but that's been addressed. Again, just kind of wanted to, I don't know if we want to roll through what we've already discussed or kind of talk about the new policies, the new additions, 1-11, 1-12, and 1-13, internal controls, grants, and accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. How do you want to proceed, Mr. Chair?
I'd like to hear comments from others of our commission, but my preference would be to go through the thing from beginning to end. I think we can do almost all of it very, very quickly, and that will get us down to these new items. I have a couple of nits and gnats going through, but I think those are the things that I'd like to get out.
Okay.
And this way we have a complete document, I think, that the commission has reviewed, made comments on, and then you can modify as is necessary for the council meeting and study sessions.
Okay, certainly.
Anybody else have any comments on the commission?
That's fine.
Yep, I'm fine with that.
Good.
Okay. Why don't you lead us through, Dan?
All right. So we'll dive in with the annual budget process, policy 1-1. The first page, again, is pretty much purpose, scope, and definitions. Page 2, we have some additional definitions, the policies themselves, which then bleeds into page 3. Are there any comments, questions? I'm just looking for feedback on the first policy 1-1 dealing with the annual budget process.
I have nothing. Anybody else have anything? You're home.
All right. So we'll go into strategic long-range financial planning, policy 1-2. This policy is the shortest of all of the policies. Are there any comments or questions, feedback on this policy?
Good. I have nothing. Anybody else?
I do not.
Sounds like you're good to go.
All right. Thank you. Moving forward to fiscal monitoring and reporting, 1-3. Three policies included in this: financial status and performance report, status report on capital projects, and compliance with financial policy statements. Any questions, comments, feedback on policy 1-3?
I have one, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Fire away, Jim.
All right. On 2-0, I don't know, I think I said this to you, David, is whether we're actually making this report or not currently. Is this something we're currently doing?
Yeah, Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, this is something that we currently do. We report on our CIP projects on a quarterly basis to council.
To council, okay. So they're familiar with receiving this. This did lend me to give a thought that at some point it might be interesting to, or useful, I should say, not interesting, to put together a report schedule that indicates, so a council member is sitting there, particularly if they've just joined like they have recently, what should I expect? What should I see out of the finance department? What kind of reports? So that might be something that doesn't fit into this project, but it might be useful later on as a tool for the council members and even for the commission members. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chairman.
Any other comments? I think that's a good comment, John. I think not only the council, but us, I think, having an expectation is what goes on. Okay.
Moving forward.
Come on, Dave, you're on a roll.
All right. Next policy is 1-4, banking and investments. So I think we've spent quite a bit of time on this policy, massaging it, modifying it, a lot of good comments. And I think we had a good foundation to build off of here, but just trying to strengthen it here and there and provide clarity in certain areas. Any questions, any further comments or questions regarding 1-4?
I have one, Nick.
Okay.
Under the policy 1.0, we talk about safety, liquidity, and return. I've never seen the term return in any public document that looks at investments. I've always seen the term safety, liquidity, and yield.
Right.
So what is return? How do you define return as opposed to yield?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I am more than willing to, I agree with that. Honestly, I think return was a carryover from our current policies. See if I can find that. I'm pretty sure that's a carryover term from our current policies. I have no issue with, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. Changing that term to yield does seem to make more sense and is more accepted in investment circles and in the investment realm. So that's an easy fix.
Quite frankly, that's my only net. I think we've made a lot of good, understandable changes to this particular policy, and I think it's pretty much there.
Yeah, and just to be clear, Mr. Chair and members of the commission, that will also impact 1.3, where we talk about return. Right. So yield will be the term, not return, throughout the rest of the policy.
Yeah. Anybody else have any comments on this particular subset?
No.
Okay. Sounds good.
Moving forward to 1-5, capital expenditures and improvements. Any questions, comments, feedback on this policy?
Just one clarification. Will we say 5% of the city sales tax? Are we talking just the city collected sales tax, or are we talking state share of sales tax as well? We calculate the 5%.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, I believe that's the total. So I believe it includes the state shared, and I can verify that, but I'm pretty sure that that includes both the city and the state shared.
Because I think you probably want to say that then. If that's
okay. Yep, that's good. That's a good clarification.
Maybe if you just inserted the word total after the 5% of the town's total estimated sales tax revenues.
Okay. And I believe Michael Dykeman, our senior budget analyst, is on the call. I would want to hear, because he may know this for sure. I'm almost sure, but I know he knows this, the answer to this question for sure. So if I can unmute him and he can opine on this as well. Okay, so apparently he's looking at financials. So can you repeat the question, Commissioner Mason? He's asking for a repeat of the question.
Yes, I was wondering if the 5% capital contribution, is it calculated just on city sales tax, or does it include state share sales tax as well?
Yeah. Okay, everyone, hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great question, Commissioner Mason. That's calculated just on the general fund portion of our sales tax collections.
Okay.
It doesn't count the state shared or the separate half cent.
Okay.
So can you clarify that or make the change to make it clear in that section?
Yeah, I can do that. And that's why I wanted to, because obviously I answered that question incorrectly. I thought that it was the total, but it's not. So that does need clarification, and I'll make that adjustment.
Thank you.
Good question, Commissioner Mason. Thank you.
Anybody else have any comments or suggestions on capital expenditures and improvements?
Do not.
Okay.
Okay, I'm hoping the next one is easy. 1-6, the PSPRS pension funding policy. So this one is, again, just verbatim from the current pension funding policy. So no changes there. I guess the one change is just including some of these definitional components and throwing them in the definitions where they're a little better suited than in the policy itself. But other than that, the information is intact. There's not been any substantive changes to this policy. So any questions or comments about the PSPRS pension funding policy? And of course, this is one that we'll need to update in about 3 or 4 months. So this, we'll bring this one back certainly as we update it, because it needs to be updated on an annual basis.
Annette. Under definitions,
okay,
first paragraph, we're talking about UAAL results from blah, 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 payroll increases, et cetera, begin. That word actually should be being.
Oh.
Otherwise,
yes, you're right. That's a good catch. That's a good catch. Thank you. That was me fat fingering that one.
I do it all the time.
Yep. Thank you.
That's my only net. Anybody else have any comments or suggestions?
No.
Not hearing anything.
I'll have to look at the current policy and see if I fat fingered that one as well.
You did. You did.
I thought so. All right. Policy 1-7, revenues. This one, again, a lot of, I believe a lot of the current, the current policy that we have covering revenues is covered in here, but just kind of really modifying the structure of it. I don't think we're, that we left anything out that was substantive out of the current policies. I think pretty much everything made it in here, but maybe just kind of beefing it up a little bit. But any questions, comments, feedback on 1-7?
David, John Latchford, did we decide who has the authority to write off uncollectible accounts? Did you?
Vice Chair Latchford, members of the commission, I saw that comment. Thank you for the feedback on that. I think that, I could certainly designate myself as having the authority, but I think we probably need to, it probably belongs at lower levels or maybe even distributed. I'm not comfortable yet making that determination because I think where I'm at is because some of these revenue collections happen in different departments and certainly not just here. I want to certainly delegate some of that authority and responsibility to those departments that have more control over their revenue collections. If I was going to make that change, if I was going to include it, I think I would want to, and I don't know the best way to state it, but I think maybe distribute some of that authority out to the departments that have primary revenue collection, whether it's the court or our parks department or whatever that looks like, our CED where they're collecting permit fees and et cetera. I think I'd want to allow them to have the authority to make those adjustments over their receivables and to write those off as necessary. But there's got to be a tie-in certainly to finance here so that we're aware of that. There's got to be an appropriate internal control over that process. So I'm still pondering that one. I'm not comfortable with, I apologize. I'm not comfortable with presenting that quite yet, that change or that adjustment.
Can you set some kind of a dollar target?
I'm hearing two voices here.
I'm sorry, I jumped on somebody. Go ahead.
I said it sounds like it could be a policy down the road if you want to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I just need to – part of my hesitation is I'm still trying to learn how we do things here at the town how things function and operate and – it is something that that's on my radar. I think it's something that I would propose as an amendment moving forward at some point, but I want to gather a little more information before I make that call. Like I said, I'm comfortable saying, well, it's just the CFO has the authority to review receivables and write them off, but there's got to be a process that has to happen before. There's got to be a review process and a monitoring process that happens, and I want to make sure that we have the appropriate controls in place. I'm sure we do. I need to have an understanding and awareness of what that looks like so that I can properly reflect that in the policy.
Yeah, you want it in a policy or a procedure linked to?
Yeah, part of it,
targets or something.
That's a good point, Mr. Chair. Part of it is procedural. And certainly part of it will be policy. So there is a link there I don't necessarily want to include the procedures in the policy, but I want to have an awareness, understanding of what those procedures are currently before I make adjustments or amendments to that at a policy level that could fundamentally impact departments and how they're and their revenue collections and their receivables.
David, do you have any sense of the materiality that exists around write-offs for receivables?
Vice Chair Latchford, I really don't. I mean, again, we're pretty diversified in terms of a town, in terms of our revenue collection. So, so even, you know, we talked with Bernie, I mean, had him, asked him questions and had him on as our golf contractor. Like, I'm not worried about our golf contractor controlling their write-offs of uncollectibles. I don't think it's a huge issue, truthfully. I think most of our collections come through state sales tax or state shared revenues, as we all know. As it relates to fees and things, I think where we would have an issue would be in the court system, but those are pretty immaterial in terms of the overall revenue structure of the town. They really don't have a large or significant impact in our revenue structure or scheme. So I don't know that this is a huge issue, and it's, you know, that's a primary reason why I haven't really addressed it yet, because I'm working on some other larger issues as I'm trying to make my way through different town functions and processes. But yeah, it is something that I do want to address. I think it does belong in the policies. I just want to make sure that it's addressed appropriately, and I'm not comfortable or confident yet that I have that information to do so.
I imagine your water utility probably has a pretty fair process.
Yes, Commissioner Mason, that's a good point. Yeah, no, they do. Again, that's something I think as we look at uncollectibles, we're going to see that uncollectible accounts. We're going to see that primarily in the water utility and in the court system, and probably the court system the most because of the structure of who's coming through that system.
So I suggest that we table that decision until after you've had a chance to look at the data. I just recommend that we at least put it on our radar screen downstream to make sure that we're covering that base. It was interesting, I was looking at this today, and this was actually something that was added to the existing policy. So I'm glad you brought it to the forefront, and we should take a look at it in the future.
Yeah, I think, it's addressed in the policy. It belongs in the policy. The question is, who has the authority? I think that's what you're getting at, Vice Chair, if I understand that. And,
yes.
And I just wasn't willing to stick my neck out there and pigeonhole the town on an authority issue. I mean, I think it probably does need to be addressed at some point, but right now, as it stands, there's not a change per se that I'm recommending in the policies as to how this is dealt with, because I just need to understand how that process and the function works before I make that recommendation.
Got it.
Possible that it should read that the town can periodically write off accounts as designated by the town or delegated by the town manager?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I have no hesitation with adding that language. It's up to you all as a commission. I mean, what are your thoughts?
I'm always a big fan of town manager or designee.
I mean, ultimately the buck stops with you.
So, exactly. Well, and again, I think that, I appreciate listening to the conversation here, and, you know, as Dave is getting his arms wrapped around all of these things, it's not a material change to the policy at this point. And if we just town manager designee, that'll give us the time and flexibility to be able to figure out what that process is. It might be different in the water utility. might be different in the, you know, in the court system. So appreciate that robust conversation.
So Vice Chair Latchford, does that language work for you as just designating the town manager or designee as the appropriate authority to review write-offs of uncollectible accounts or write-downs of accounts?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just great.
Okay. I'll include that language then. Thank you.
Mary, do we know when the last time this was looked at? Do we know the last time we looked at uncollectibles and kind of an aging report and dug into what might be appropriate for write-off?
I was going to say, with regard to the courts, it's funny, I was just talking to the judge about this the other day. What's interesting is that the judge is mandated by law to be able to, for example, waive fees for indigents, right? Who are the ones who typically are unable to pay their fees. And so he kind of already does, the judge sort of already does that. That's how, you know, because it just keeps adding up and then they can't pay it. And, you know, there comes a point where so it's almost a de facto write-off process that's going on in the courts. And then it's, you know, the finance department then makes those adjustments. And you're right, the water utility does have a very structured process on when they write things off and when they're uncollectible and that sort of thing. And then really our stormwater utility is really the only other one. It's not a huge amount of revenue. It's a little, that is probably the one area we might want to dig into a little bit. But in terms of aging them, I don't know if that's something that Dave will have to respond to.
Yeah. You know, I think every audit season when we go through and reconcile and prepare for the auditors at year end, this is something that is that's high on my radar. So it ought to be done at least annually at a minimum, because we don't want to be overstating our receivables. That's, you know, obviously we want our receivables to be properly and fairly stated in our financial statements. You know, again, it's something that that our auditors, they have to be comfortable with because they're opining on it. So if it's material, so I think this is something that we will certainly revisit in the future. And it's something that is on my radar as to taking a look at. I know that just in the water bond refunding process, when we're looking at refunding some of the loans that we have and the water bond that we have that we're looking at refunding, they have gone through the process and have, you know, they're and this is, again, I haven't looked at it, but information from our water utility is that that their collectibles are very strong right now, that they're seeing very little write-offs, historically speaking, compared to history, and that's a testament to you know, that our town, that our feast, our water utility fees are you know, our water costs our water charges, I should say, are not onerous, that people are able to pay those. You know, you would expect with the pandemic and some people being out of work, et cetera, that you might see a spike. And they're seeing actually the entire opposite. They're seeing actually really good collections through the water utility. So again, these are things that that I need to kind of dig into at some point. And I just haven't had the opportunity to get there, but it is on my radar.
Okay. Any other comments or suggestions for David on this section?
Okay, so 1-8 is expenditures. Again, kind of similar to revenues, included a lot of the current policies that we have in expenditures, just kind of lay them out a little bit differently. I think that this one is where that change comes in, where I dealt with budget amendments and transfers. That's the major, that's 7.0. So that's the major. And 6.0 is new as well. The Uniform Expenditure Reporting System, I wanted to include that in there because that's a state requirement. So those are really the two primary additions to this policy that you may not have seen in past iterations. I'll open it up to questions. All these transfer 7.1 through 7.5, those are all current policies that the town has. There are no changes there whatsoever that are being proposed. It's just again, kind of including them in a little bit more structured format. So.
Did you hear something, Mike?
No, I'm fine.
David, on 6.0, is there we or should we reference a specific section in the Constitution or statute having to do with the limits on expenditures?
I could
just the complete documentation on this thing, or
yeah, I mean, I could certainly do that. That'd be a pretty easy fix.
Right. I assume what will happen is if any change is made to that particular document, it's automatically going to have to be reflected to us.
Right.
So, I mean, that might just sort of tie that together.
Yeah, I think the only, I guess the issue there, I mean, that what that adds is that it provides a reference point for someone to go to, I guess, to find out what the authoritative source is, rather than just, not have it, leaving it open-ended and having them have to go and search and find it.
Yeah, I would rather see that than have you expand this document. Spelling it out. I don't see a need to do that.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, feedback on the expenditure policy?
Yeah, let me, Mr. Chairman, let me just go back for a second. I want to make sure I fully understand Section 2.0, which is called avoidance of operating deficits. And the way it's written, first of all, is that measurement just for the general fund, highway fund, and community center fund, or does it include all funds, David?
It's a good point, a good question, Vice Chair Latchford. I would say right now, I would recommend it just primarily, so the way that the town is structured, obviously the general fund is where the operations of the town basically more or less happens. We have the highway fund, the community center fund. Obviously there are operational components that are there. That's why we present those in the monthly financial report to you and the council. So with that said, I'm open to those three. I think when you include those three, you're basically including pretty much the, more or less the entire town. I get it. The water fund has operational components. The stormwater fund has operational components as well, but they function differently because of how they're funded. They're an enterprise fund. They're self-supporting, relying upon enterprise charges, user fees, or consumption charges, I should say, to fund those operations. So I would hesitate in including, because I just don't think it's necessary, maybe it is. I don't know. But I think right now, as I think about it, it's probably not as necessary for the water fund to be included in this discussion, just because they go through on a very routine basis. In fact, I think they're going through one either now or shortly commencing in the future, maybe in the next month or two or three. Where they're going to re-examine their water fees again and charges. So they'll look at their rate structure and determine whether it's adequate and appropriate. And if it isn't, then they'll take that to council for amendment. And if it is, then they'll then they'll pass on that and say, yeah, this is good enough. So, so I don't know that these corrective actions, I think what we're trying to hit at here is if there was a major event like the Great Recession or like COVID or like whatever that really was stressful on the operating, on the primary operating revenues of the town, how would we address those? How would we deal with those? And so when we're talking about that in that term, in that context, I think, you know, I'm primarily looking at this from the general fund standpoint, but I'm fine loading in the highway fund as well, because that's a critical fund to the town, obviously funded through street gas tax revenues and through the state, et cetera. So, and then also our community center fund, where it's primarily funded through our golf operation and some other parks and rec fees and charges, whether it's swimming pools and whatnot. So we don't want to run deficits in any of our funds, operating deficits, but really those three cover the lion's share of the town in terms of its operations. So I'm open to feedback on what you all think.
Well, then under what you just said, then, David, we probably want to define specifically in this section that it only applies to those three funds.
Yeah.
The audience here is really the council. This will be their policy. I'm not familiar enough with how sensitive they are to inclusion of the enterprise funds into this determination. In the past, I believe the only time I've seen them involved in the enterprise funds is when they've had rate increase proposals. But you might want to get, you might say that you're just recommending it this time, but I'd write it in there and at least let them know that specifically this only reflects the three funds.
Okay.
Would you put it in that beginning where you say avoidance of operating deficits involving general fund?
Sure.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Is that the place that you would put it, John?
So then the second point is that does the trigger on this these actions that are defined here in this section occur monthly or over a longer period of time or is determined by the council? Because right now, I know that you want to get a sense of urgency here, which should be the case when these kind of situations develop, but I think there's a lot of interpretation here. Would the council now expect to see something when? I think probably that's boiling it down to is when does this trigger?
I don't have it in front of me, but are we talking about the normal month-to-month review that you go through, like you give to us every month that the departments are going to, and if they see a situation where things aren't looking good, then they're going to obviously look at that along with you. So I think it's a process that we're doing on a monthly basis, just like we're doing now. And if trends start to show that expenditures are an issue, or revenue is an issue, then you want to start making corrections as you go so that you're not in a pinch by the end of the fiscal year.
Right. And I think that's what they did in this COVID situation. You know, right. I think if you identify a dollar or expenditure percentage, then you're kind of tied that you have to do something. So I'd be reluctant to advise that, I think, right? But I also think that how you explained it, that this is kind of for a big deal situation. It's not, oh, if we go over by a little bit, it's, we've got to, you know, have a hiring freeze. So maybe some way of wording it that would indicate that it really pertains to not a normal situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think a lot of this really, you know, and you see it in the language, it's predicated upon the forecast of where we're going to end up. And some of these revenue components do, you know, they are cyclical. You know, we know that we're going to collect more in sales tax revenue in January. Actually, it's going to be reported in January, but it's going to really be due to collections that happened in December and November due to the holiday season and so forth. So, you know, I think we've got to have at least a little bit of latitude there to be able to ride through things that are cyclical in nature that we don't want to, you know, get too worked up over, because they happen year over year, typically. They tend to happen year over year. So I think, but it is something that, you know, we do want to avoid operating deficits. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. The issue in question is what's the best way, what's the proper language that allows staff the latitude to address situations that they deem to be, significant. If they're not significant, then we're probably not going to take the type of action that's recommended in this policy. And so, but all that really is dependent upon the environment, having an environmental scan and an awareness of what's going on economically, and being able to forecast and plan out what type of impacts that has on the town from an operating standpoint by the end of the year.
Sounds interesting, David, is that the town's pace of financial performance during the year seems to take a little bit, getting some momentum going in the beginning of the year. And so you tend to see, maybe this is a little bit different this year because we got the CARES funding and everything, but it tends to be operating deficits through the first part of the year. And that's what, and there's a very sense of conservative forecasting within the organization, which I don't think we want to change. And they conservatively forecast through the remainder of the year. And then as we get to the fourth quarter, things accelerate. And then we find out that by the time we get to the end of the year, we have a surplus, which is where we all want to be. And so I think when you read this, I know we've got some desire to have responsiveness to the situation and the environment, but we could get into a situation where we encourage more unconservative or inconservative forecasting, so we don't have to get into this process. So I think we need to get some thought as to how much time needs to go by before this triggers. And that's kind of where I came from. Maybe you want to try, I just throw it out, maybe quarterly. You know, if we have a quarterly deficit, we need to approach this and decide whether we want to do corrective actions or something. I think monthly is going to make it so immediate that it's going to be tough to react, because you'll be at the next month. And if that one's negative, then now you... So I think maybe more time might be a better approach at this point than less time.
Yeah, I hear those comments, Vice Chair Latchford. I think it really is dependent upon the situation that we're in. If we're seeing sales tax collections drop off a cliff because we're in another great recession or even a depression, then that really is going to, you know, if we wait a quarter to address that, we're going to be way behind the ball game on it. I think the COVID thing, because it was so obviously the recent example, because it was so new and no one had any experience with dealing with this before, and no one knew how deeply this was going to cut or what kind of impacts it was going to have on sales tax revenues. I think, again, it required some immediate action, which, you know, I think that the town took, and thankfully it did. And obviously we ended up better than we expected, but we would rather end up better than expected than worse than expected. And so I think it really is situational. I think in some cases, the situation, I mean, waiting a quarter and kind of letting things play out is going to be the right course of action. I think in other cases, if you wait a quarter, you've wasted time and you're never, you know, you lost the ability to really deal with something that could have a pretty severe or significant impact on you financially. You've lost the ability to deal with that in a timely manner, which is kind of putting you behind the eight ball.
Sure. And that certainly is the other side of the coin. No question. So, I mean, while it seems like it's the right policy to put into place, remember the person who's going to be executing this policy is not you or I. It's going to be a council member and everything. So, you know, at this point, you know, will they be required under their own policy to demand that the staff bring forward a corrective action? So what I'm trying to do, and I recognize there's a lot to be considered here, but you don't want to find yourself faced and put into a corner every month if you continue the presentation of funds being in a deficit, which is what this is a policy. The policy saying you would need to do that. So, you know, you could always say for a quarter subject to determination of the council or management to proceed otherwise. In other words, something like that. And I'm trying to build some flexibility into this so you're not always doing these studies for the council that's going to take up a lot of time and effort and may never get executed.
Can I assume that there are some automatic checks going on in that you're providing monthly financial information to the council? You're providing monthly financial information to this commission. And certainly internally, you're providing monthly financial information for review. So there are several points in there that could trigger the question, well, this doesn't look good. What are you going to do about it? But is that good enough from a policy perspective?
Well, they're basically following the policy now. I mean, we see every month that we're getting a status of fund report. And I think if there is an issue with revenues, it's going to show up as you go along so that you can make a decision, you know, before it's gone too far. So I think you don't want to certainly do it more than, or, bi-weekly or something like that. I think the monthly is a good financial cutoff where you have reports, you have a specific point in time, and you get the feel of what the trend is as you get more and more into the fiscal year. And by looking at it monthly, you'll start seeing trends that you can maybe make tweaks now. And then you might look at it at mid-year. Usually your mid-year review, you've had 6 months worth of data. You really are probably getting a good feel for the trend. And then that still gives you plenty of time to react if you have to make, cuts, whatever you have to do to resolve the issue. So I think monthly is giving you a good feel for it. By your mid-year, you probably have a pretty good idea of what kind of action you may have to take.
It's kind of go ahead.
I think in the case that we just experienced this year, I'm not sure we had any negative monthly reporting before the discussion started, and I think that was the right thing. If there's some giant overriding situation, i.e. COVID, i.e. the market drops, whatever it is, I don't think you're going to go, oh, well, let's not discuss it for two more months. Let's wait until we see some impact on financials. I think obviously we all know in this room that those kinds of situations are going to have a financial impact. And I think they started talking about this well before we had any numbers, which was the right thing to do. I mean, I think you need to react as soon as you know there's something that is that large and going to have that much of an impact, which is what they did. So I don't know if you're going to put yourself into a hole by having a detailed plan for when to look at it. I think you maybe want something more overarching that you know, says if the situation dictates that they need to start making some plans to minimize the operational deficits. Maybe just something a little less detailed and specific, but to make sure that if we are in that kind of a situation, that they do it with more immediacy.
I'd kind of like to draw the commission's attention to the fiscal monitoring and reporting policy that we reviewed earlier, specifically 1.0, which talks about monthly reports and outlines the fact that if there are any remedial actions necessary to maintain the town's financial position, they'll be prepared for review by the town manager and town council. So maybe it's already here.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
I think
that's exactly what they did, right?
Exactly.
And it worked. They made some changes. Yeah.
So I'm not certain that we need to hit it with a hammer a second time.
I'm good with that.
I do think, though, that your point, John, about what's involved in the operating deficits, which funds are involved, should be referenced in here, if not right in that opening avoidance of operating deficits in or somewhere else. So that clarifies what we're looking at.
Well, when you consider, other than the general fund, every other fund is budgeted by fund. So I think if there is a deficit going to occur, to me, it should apply to all funds. I mean, because uh-huh. you have a deficit coming on in whatever fund it is, you're going to want to take some sort of action, and you're reviewing it on, like you said, on a monthly basis. If you see an issue, then you react to the issue.
Okay. So maybe it's operating deficits of any funds.
That's what I would think. I mean, there's some funds that are more important than others, obviously. Right. But if there's a deficit in a fund and you budget by fund, you know, you're going to have to take action because you don't want to exceed the budget in the fund.
Right. And I certainly
do some other because the town council has approved a budget. And if you're going to exceed that budget, then something has to happen.
Yeah.
So hearing all those comments, what if we just took, David, the very first sentence in that section 2.0 and say the town, at the town council's direction, shall take immediate correction and leave everything and change only for the funds. And that way, they will have to give you the directive to proceed with this section to be able to fulfill it.
But the thing is, we're going to provide information to the town council to make an action. They're not going to know necessarily what action to take without the town, without, you know.
Sure, yeah.
You know, they're going to provide the council with probably, here's some options, what do you want to do given this situation? So, you know, by going through the monthly process that we do now, if there is an issue that's significant enough, then you know, options will be provided to the town council for them to make the decision on what way to go.
Right. But the town has, all I'm suggesting is by inserting those couple of words is the town, the council will have to execute this section based upon their direction. And that can happen sooner or later. They don't have to wait for financial statements. It just depends upon what is being presented by the finance committee, finance department. I don't think anything in this that's being changed thus far would necessarily preclude management from moving forward, because they already know what the results are before the council knows.
Should we give Dave poetic justice and then we can review it?
My suggestion would say that this is not triggered until such time as the council directs.
Yeah, I members of the commission, I think I mean, we certainly could write that into, I could write that into the policy. I think the challenge is that sometimes, again, just the nature of things is that if something was really immediate and severe, that waiting for town council direction, you're basically waiting for a council meeting. You have to, you know, I guess if it was that severe, maybe we would have a special council meeting and try to hold it that way. Or, I mean, I wouldn't want to be waiting for council's direction to deal with something that I knew needed to be dealt with and fixed immediately. And I think that's my challenge. And you know, I think if it's really severe, if it's really immediate, then it needs that type of attention, like right now. We can't wait because time is not on our side. The longer we wait, the more we're digging that hole, and we're trying to, you know, that hole just gets deeper and deeper as time goes on. And so I think that's my hesitation with that recommendation. But I'm open, I'm not intractable on this. This is not a mountain or a hill that I'm going to die on. So
David, perhaps you could, you know, throw in some language that said if it, and I'm missing the term here, but I'll just use out something silly called double secret emergency. That in the event of double secret emergency, the town manager can take action as long as it is affirmed by the town council at the nearest possible time.
Okay. Thoughts on that language?
Yeah, no, that's good. Yes.
I have an issue with that.
Go ahead, Chair.
Okay.
No issue?
I think I don't have an issue.
Oh, you don't have an issue. Okay. I thought you said you had an issue.
No. I'm copacetic with that.
Okay.
I would prefer a different status other than double secret emergency, but I'm sure you can find something.
Yeah, I can wordsmith that. That's something I can work with. That's a good recommendation. Thank you, Commissioner Newell. Any other comments, feedback, questions, concerns about 1-8?
I think you can move forward.
Let's see, hold on. Oh,
Kathy has something.
I did, and I'm laughing because it was, I must have read it. Purchasing was the last line item, I think, the last time I read it. So I didn't know if there was any kind of a reference to any other purchasing policies that exist.
Yeah, so Commissioner Salverson, members of the commission, so I could certainly make that reference in the purchasing policy. The current procurement policy is housed in an administrative directive for the town and also in the town code. And so So it's not in a, I'll say, a policy set per se, although it functions and acts very much like a policy. It also has a lot of procedural components to it. But I could reference that administrative directive, which then would give someone, again, kind of a place to, you know, if they needed further information or wanted to see what was included in the procurement, the policy, the administrative directive for the town, that they could easily find that.
Right. So, yep.
Good idea.
Saves a lot of words.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good point.
Okay.
All right. 1-9 is debt. Let me see if there's, there's a new, couple new sections I included on this that I wanted to highlight. I apologize. 11.0 is post-issuance compliance. So this is something that is required for us as a town to do, or any government agency that issues bonds or debt, that they have to comply with post-issuance compliance. Basically, there's reporting on an EMMA website and some different things that are not really, they're more procedural, they're not really policy worthy. But basically what we want to say is, what I say here is that we will comply with those requirements in conformance with federal tax laws. Kind of just setting that standard for the town that moving forward, we're going to do everything we need to do to comply and keep our tax exempt issuances tax exempt and not place the town at risk from that standpoint. There's also a bond indebtedness report that's required by the state. And so I included a policy on that. That is state law. And so I just referenced that again. That's something that I can already hear the point. Well, just reference the ARS. So I can certainly make that change as well. So
number 10 probably should have a reference also.
Okay. Yep.
I think that just keeps you out of trouble and gives people a link that if they need to do further research for what went behind this, they can get at it.
Yep. Anything else on debt?
In your previous policy, you talk about voter approved and not non-voter approved debt. And it looks like the city tends to go with non-voter approved debt. And I'm just wondering if you should have some kind of an explanation that's, or if that's your policy, why do you take that route, or what's the general concept in doing that versus voter approved?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Commissioner Mason. And honestly, I don't have any, just being so fresh and new here at the town, I don't have a good answer to that question or comment. I would say, just generally speaking, taking something out to the voter is a more costly process. It's more time intensive from a staff standpoint.
Well, I suspect part of this has to do with whether or not you want to have property tax,
right?
Your secondary property tax. So I imagine that probably has something to do with it, additional tax. But, I imagine you have some criteria or something you go through from a management perspective that says we want to go this route versus, the voter route. So, if there is some criteria there, since that's what you do, I think that would be pertinent to this particular area.
Yeah. And I think you make a good point. I think when you're looking at voter approved debt, it typically does refer to property taxes, and so that would, and we don't have a property tax. I don't think there's any intent or inclination of the town or its council to proceed down that path. The town currently is under leveraged. We have a very low you know, debt structure or debt load in comparison to many other cities and towns in this region and even statewide. So I don't know that we would I guess the question is, do you think that it's worthy to try to address that in the policy when I don't know that there's an intent to necessarily?
Well, I guess that's my question to you. I mean, it's an approach that you're taking. So if you've taken that approach, you must have a, you know, basis for going that route. And I mean, I can understand it, but, you know, on the other side of that, you know, they're saying, well, you know, maybe citizens should have the right to vote, but on being have more debt. But, you know, there are some bonding instruments that you have that don't require. I mean, it's,
right.
Your certificates of participation, they don't require. It can be mayor and council approved. So it's just, I think it's just an approach that the town has decided to take. And I would think if that's the approach, then maybe there ought to be some discussion, maybe even if it's just general, to let people know that why you tend to take this approach versus another approach. Just my thoughts on that.
Well, you could also change the title of this whole thing to non-voter approved debt.
Well, I don't think you want to limit yourself, because if you ever want to go to something, then
you haven't. Then
you have your option.
Your policy.
Yeah. Right. So,
for expand your policy.
You know, think about that a bit if you want to.
So, Mike, let me ask you a question there. I'm just curious for myself. Does the town have the unilateral right to initiate voter-approved debt, or is that something that they have to get approval from the state?
Well, I think it depends on what debt. If you're going with general obligation bonds, then that's required for voter approval. Like, there's another instrument if you go for certificates of participation, which is more like a leasing instrument, then that doesn't require. And I imagine our attorney could probably give us, you know, the approach that, because we call it excise revenue excise bond. So I'm sure that terminology comes into effect that why it's non-voter approved versus voter approved. So maybe the, you know, the city attorney or there could help in that regard. But so I think it just depends on what avenue you want to go. But
let me read the current policy for you all, and then I guess get your feedback, because this is what the current policy says. The general policy of the town is to fund capital projects with new dedicated streams of revenue or voter-approved debt. Non-voter-approved debt may be utilized when a dedicated revenue source other than general revenue can be identified to pay debt service expenditures. So that's the current policy.
Confusing to me, too, because my other point in this paragraph is that you use the term excise tax, but nowhere is that defined. And what you tend to do is you tend to use sales tax and excise tax interchangeably when it's not the case, because it looks like in the town situation, because you have a table in the back of your CAFR, that excise tax is really made up of your sales tax, license and permits, fines, state sales tax, state income tax. So your excise tax is more broad than just sales tax. And I think that's something that either needs to be defined in the policy. If you're using, you know, excise-backed revenue bonds, then to say it's sales tax, well, it's not technically wrong, but it's not technically correct. So I think just to clear up confusion is, since excise tax term is used quite a bit throughout, it's used in the CAFR and the notes and used in the policies, that and to say that it's sales tax is a bit confusing. So I think
maybe some clarification of what excise tax is. And if you want to reference the table and the CAFR as a way of explaining it, that's, you know, save some words too. But that was just my thought on the debt, was those two areas.
Yeah, I would say, and I appreciate those comments, and I can't include an excise tax definition, but it's going to basically, as you say, it's going to mirror sales tax, because that, I agree with you that all indications are that we're utilizing, they are really synonymous. I think as I researched that and looked into that, there should be a difference. There ought to be a difference, but I can't understand. I really don't understand why we're utilizing a different term, or why we're utilizing it synonymously with our sales tax collections.
But it looks like your excise tax is, or the revenue source that you're pledging, and you're mm-hmm. using the term excise tax,
right.
is more than just sales tax. It's state sales tax, it's state income tax, it's license and permits and fines all make up the excise tax revenue. That's the way I read it from looking at your one table in the back of the CAF room.
Okay.
I mean, if that's not the case, then I guess it just, to me, there seems to be confusion in terminology that you're not consistently using. You're trying to interchange something, and it just seems confusing, because nowhere else have you defined excise tax, but yet you have, but you're not kind of following it. So that, I guess, is my input.
What are you thinking, Dave?
What I'm thinking is we're not following the current policy, because we have no voter approved debt that I'm aware of.
Right. You don't.
It says the general policy of the town is to fund capital projects with new dedicated streams of revenue or voter approved debt. So that, to me, that we're not following that. Because I mean, I'm a town resident, and I've never approved the town going out to debt on anything that I can recall.
Part of an election that you, if you had it. So.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. No. So I guess, you know, I think that's why I wanted to read the policy, is, you know, to you as commissioners, because to let you know that, I mean, my opinion, and I may be out on an island here, but I don't think so. I don't think we're following the policy. So to me, that's not a good policy to include. We need to adjust that. And that's why you don't see that terminology in what's proposed in the draft. So regarding the excise tax collections, I'm going to have to, you're right, Commissioner Mason, I'm looking at the table right here. It's got town sales and franchise taxes, licenses and permits, fines, state shared sales tax, and state shared income tax included in the historical and projected excise tax collections on page 152 of the CAFR in the statistical section. I got to be honest, to me, that's a miss. I mean, I get it. Again, this kind of is what, so these statistical tables, the statistical section in the CAFR, generally speaking, I don't want to pigeonhole this, but generally speaking, it is used by the bond community to be able to do analysis and to determine the creditworthiness of the town, to determine, you know, it provides comfort to bondholders to ensure that they're going to get repaid, et cetera. So, but to me, as I've looked at this excise tax issue, because again, I've heard this, you know, now several two or three times in these meetings, and it hasn't gone unnoticed. But to me, it's a misappropriation of the term. I mean, because,
well, I don't know. That's what you'd have to tell us, because
yeah, I don't think licenses and permits and fines, or even state shared sales tax or state shared income tax, as I've looked at the definition of an excise tax, those are not excise taxes.
Well, yeah, I don't know what you're, I would imagine if you're pledging, because it says in your, that you're, the revenue that you're pledging to pay this debt service is based on excise tax. And that's right. Why I thought, you know, there needs to be some, because you already, you can see it's very confusing. And I think we just need to clarify it so that everybody's on the same page as when you're dealing with, you know, what revenues you're saying that you're using to pay the debt service on, you know, all your debt.
So let's, I guess to, for the sake of moving forward, moving this forward, let me do this. Let me include an excise tax revenue definition here to this policy that mirrors that what we include as excise. I just fundamentally disagree with the definition, because if you look at, if you do it, you know, a Webster's, you know, yeah, definition of excise tax, you're not going to find some of these components in an in the technical definition of an excise tax. But with that said, this is how we're utilizing it in the statistical section of the CAFR. You know, neither here nor there. I mean, if it provides the clarification that you're looking for, Commissioner Mason, I mean, that's.
Well, I guess what you're looking at, I'm looking at too, is that what's in your bond paperwork that says, mm-hmm, this is the revenue we're using to pledge, because that's what you're saying when you issue, right, bonds, that you have a specific revenue source that you're pledging to cover that debt service. And I guess we need to have an understanding of what that exact revenue source is. Is it just sales tax? Is it a combination of revenues that you're pledging? What is that, so that we can understand that better, I guess?
Yeah, I think my response to that is all that gets outlined and detailed in the bond documents.
Well, maybe that could tell us what we...
You know, and so, you know, the... If there are covenants or if there are things of that nature, all of that obviously is very detailed. The preliminary official or the official statement, once it gets finalized, that the investors review and take a look at. Again, they need to have an awareness and an understanding of what's securing the amounts that they're loaning loaning to the town. So. So I guess I don't have any problem with including that definition. I don't know that necessarily is going to change anything moving forward in terms of, but it would provide clarification, certainly, I guess.
I guess part of my issue, too, is that we use the same terminology wherever we use it. Because right now, we're shifting back and forth. And if it's truly just sales tax, then for some reason, excise comes out there because that's what the bonds are called that we're issuing. So,
right. No, that's right.
So once we get the terminology correct and what the meaning is, then I think we're fine.
Okay.
What about this issue of non-voter approved versus voter approved debt?
Well, you must have a reason for what you do, so that must be your policy. So maybe, if you need to research it a little bit, it just seems to me if that's the approach you're taking, I don't necessarily think you want to limit it to just that, because that option you need to have every time you come into a debt issue, it's which way you want to go. But if you're going one direction most of the time, you must have a reason for going to that direction. And that's what your policy normally is giving you the direction you want to go in, or at least an option of where you want to go. I mean, if you needed to research that a bit or discuss it a bit and with other folks, that's fine.
Well, is the real elephant in the room? Do you want an issue of a policy that the town is not interested in a property?
Well, I mean, it's up to you. We don't dictate what policy to use. If you feel like that what you have is good, then
I think if it was in there to start with, it ought to be in there now, so we don't make the council have to do a political choice on a policy.
Or if you have a reason for not doing it, then that's fine too. But I think we just need, you know, what direction do you want to go, David, I guess is.
Yeah, I mean, this will be reviewed annually. We can always take it out. And I just think right now, they've got a big hill to climb here. And to ask them to get into that discussion, we all know where that leads to. I agree with Mike. Let's leave it all in, and then we can come back and take it out later. Got my vote, Mike?
That's fine.
Well, not all the time.
So are you completely confused, Dave, or am I completely confused?
No, so I'm hearing that we want to include in the draft policies for the town council to adopt a policy that the town doesn't follow and, to my understanding, has not followed since I've been here in the past 13 and a half years. So
maybe you want to talk it over with Mary or your attorney before you decide, and that's fine. I mean,
yeah, I think as I, you know, and again, I'm kind of new to this, you know, certainly to Arizona town functioning and, you know, operations, et cetera. My understanding is that there are certain types of debt that must be voter approved. And then there are other types of debt that, you know, I don't think there's ever, I mean, you can always err on the side of caution and whatever, and you can take anything out to the voters. Certainly. But generally speaking, it's common practice that those types of debt issuances are not. And, you know, and so, especially as it relates to bonds. Now, COPs, I don't know if you have an option of voter approving a COP or not, but certainly bond issuances, I think you do have the option. I'm out of my wheelhouse here. This is probably better discussion for our debt attorneys and our underwriters, because they know the ins and outs of this better than
maybe I do. That's the reason why you want to go this, right? Just like when your expenditure limitation, did you want to go home rule or approval adjustment?
Right.
Did you think the voters would approve? Well, right. It might be the same way with the bonds. If you want to get your debt out there, maybe you take an approach where mayor and council obviously has to approve it, which is a much easier process than necessarily getting the voters to approve it. So I think it's a strategy you take depending on what you're trying to accomplish and how quickly you want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
David, this is Tobin. Let's go over it with the bond attorneys.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Sorry, just making myself some notes here.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments on the debt policy? Or have we beat this horse to death?
I think we beat it pretty good.
I think we hit it pretty hard. Okay.
1-10 fund balance. So again, this policy, no changes from what we've had historically that I'm aware of. I'm just reviewing it quickly again. Yeah, no, I think everything should have come over, you know, from what we've currently approved historically. Any questions, comments on fund balance?
On paragraph 4,
okay.
Are you talking about just the normal budget process? Or what is that? What are you trying to say there?
Is this town council authorization?
Right. To appropriate fund balance reserves. Does that mean appropriate by being using them in the budget?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where that happens. You know, I guess it's a matter of perspective or whatever. To me, it's a little bit different, but it can be interpreted the same as, you know, if we ask the council to approve transfers out of contingency, you could say that that's actually a utilization of fund balance as well. You can make that connection, but it's a little bit different in my opinion. But I think you get to the same result eventually.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that's what you were talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We good?
You're free and clear.
Okay. Okay, so let's get into the new stuff. 1-11 is internal controls. Here we deal with, I've got six, policies, proper authorizations, separation of duties, proper recording, access to assets and records, independent checks, and costs and benefits. A lot of this is really pretty standard, but if you need me to go over any of it in detail, I'm certainly willing to do so.
I have one question. Is there a role for your external auditor in this process?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, there really isn't. Internal controls is really dealing with the day-to-day operations and the control, the checks and balances of those operations to make sure or ensure that the financial systems are generating materially accurate financial data. So the reporting that we do on a monthly basis, we want that to be accurate. We don't want to be, misleading the public or the council or anyone for that matter. Internal controls are really designed to hopefully, if they're designed correctly, to catch errors before they become challenges and problems for the town. The auditors, they come in on the, at the end of the process, at the end of the fiscal year, they will, they're required to have an understanding of what our internal controls are and to test them. And to make sure that they function as designed. So that's really where they play. But in terms of the day-to-day functions of the town and the controls and, that we have in place, that's really more internal. That's why it's called internal controls. It's not really an external. I would say the auditors would be an external force that comes into play. But the internal controls really are dealing with processes and procedures that the town has in place to make sure that our financial reporting is accurate.
Your auditors opine on it to make sure that,
it works.
If you have good internal controls, then their scope can be narrower than if you have lousy controls, and obviously they have to do more field work.
Right. Yeah, no, that Commissioner Mason, that's absolutely right. And if we have challenges in our internal control structure, our auditors would be presenting that to the town council in terms of a management letter and making recommendations to the town in terms of the procedures that we utilize to strengthen those internal controls and they call them like material weaknesses or things like that they're looking for when they test our internal control structure.
Do you need to mention, or I know these are very general, but it's from a viewpoint of information, your computer security and stuff like that. Do you need to make a general comment? That's just kind of a question.
That would probably be that's as we've become more automated. I know that is something that is that's high on the auditor's radar. It never used to be quite as high, but as we've automated procedures and we've seen financial transactions that are more electronic in nature, et cetera, that's become an issue.
Does your IT area have procedures that you could reference or something like that if you think it's appropriate?
They do. Our IT staff, they have policies and procedures. And I could try to wordsmith another policy that could tie into what they do and kind of address that.
That'd be fine.
Any other comments, questions?
None.
Okay. 1-12 is grants. So again, this is brand new. I think the big thing here, I mean, we talk about indirect costs. So I think we allow a little bit of wiggle room in there in that policy. The town may waive or reduce indirect costs if it is deemed to be advantageous. But the general policy is that we're going to try to recover full indirect costs. So that's a biggie. The other one is that we're not going to, and I included federal or state grant requests. A lot of the state grant requests are federal in origin. And so that's why I address it the way that I do. But really what we're trying to do here is say that, and I don't know, this is where I'm open to the commission as to the amount, but I said 15,000. If it's less than 15,000, then we're not going to consider it. We're not going to pursue it. And basically the reason for that is that the administration of federal grants and awards, even if it's passed through the state or the county or some other agency, if it's federal in origin, there is a pretty onerous and administratively heavy workload that the town finance staff have to do in terms of compliance and ongoing reporting, et cetera. So we just want to make sure that the juice is worth the squeeze and that we're not pursuing a bunch of idly piddly grants that that cost us more in staff time and resources than what they provide in benefit to the town. So it's kind of that cost benefit analysis. But I will say that 15,000 is just arbitrary and capricious. There's not been any sort of study or work that's been done. It could be that we need to increase it. It could be that we want to decrease it. Although I strongly would suggest that we not decrease it, because if we're going after a $10,000 grant award, I can pretty much tell you, without going through the work, just knowing, being, you know, dealing with federal grants for a long time, actually being a former auditor of federal grants and awards, single audit and so forth, that they take a lot to administer. There are a lot of strings attached to that money. And that is, that's a challenge. So I think where this really comes into play is with our police department, because a lot of times they'll go after, you know, a little COPS grant or award or something and or a training grant or something. And though while those can be useful and whatever, again, they can be really challenging from an administrative standpoint. So
just depends on how bad you need the money.
Yeah.
Does that say that you should actually have a hard dollar amount in there?
Yeah. I'm open to the commission's comments and feedback on this.
Do you have a committee or something that would meet to discuss it, or do you have people that write grants, or I guess that would be all part of that one? If you know, obviously,
yeah, we formed a committee at my former employer just for this issue to review grants, to identify grants that were out there that we wanted to apply for. We really mirrored that with our capital improvement program process. So as we identified our capital needs and capital improvement plan, then we would say, okay, what grant awards, as we saw funding shortfalls and said, you know, well, we can't afford, you know, paying for this or whatever anytime soon. Maybe there's a grant out there that might fit the bill that would provide that funding source. I'm not aware of a similar process. That's probably something that we need to look at internally here at the town. I'll probably be adding that to my list sometime soon.
You just want to say all grant proposals will be reviewed from the perspective of whether or not they should be applied for or not. You don't, if you want to put an amount, it's fine. If you don't.
Well, it's clear in the beginning to 3.0 that there's a town budget committee that's going to evaluate. Do we have a town budget committee, David?
Yeah, we do. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm coming new here, so I have no idea what's happened historically. I know that we need a committee to evaluate this stuff. And I don't think the budget committee has historically. I know that we have a budget committee currently in place. I'm a part of it. Our IT director, Chuck Boyer, is a part of it. Our assistant town manager, our town manager. So we've got a committee in place. And so that's why I included that as the committee to review, because I know that it already exists. You know, at where I came from, we had a separate committee that, you know, that, you know, but we didn't have a budget committee at where I came from. So it's, you know, kind of a little bit different, but I think it can accomplish kind of the same thing.
Gotcha. So do you want to ask them what that dollar amount should be?
I can, but I think they're going to look to me because, you know, as it comes to, you know, compliance and administration,
customers,
usually that falls upon finance to do that. And we are a very, very lean staff. We don't have a, you know, I know some places, some surrounding communities, you know, they have a grants officer or grants director or, you know, a grants position that they have funded. And we don't, you know, we don't have that. So,
what would you think makes sense? That's a few.
I think I'd like to keep it at 15,000. That's why I proposed it. And then kind of play it by ear and see whether that's a challenge for some of the departments or not. And if they're squawking and whatever, again, maybe we can reevaluate that. But
this will be up for review in a year, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, and you can change it to $500,000 then. So.
That must be the IT department.
Any other comments or feedback on the grants policy? Again, this is a new one, so I don't want to rush it.
Look, I don't know that much about this to really comment on it. So I'm wondering, I mean, just roughly how many grants do we have right now? What is the kind of average value or typical value?
Yeah, and that's an excellent question, Commissioner Solverson. So, so I think what I'll say is the town, because it is doing well financially, a lot of grants realm is very extremely competitive to apply for grants and whatever. Usually they're looking for a high amount of need, and the town has been doing well enough financially over the last, you know, number of years to build up strong reserves, et cetera, that need is going to be difficult for us to compete against other jurisdictions and towns and cities, et cetera, that where they're just not in as strong of a financial position as we are. Mm-hmm. With that said, I mean, I think a lot of our grants are smaller in dollar value, but we don't get a lot of them. We're not successful in a lot of awards, and it's not really I think it probably ought to be more of a focus for the town, but it really, I mean, to my knowledge, I don't want to, you know, speak out of turn here, but I just don't think we haven't centralized it. We don't have a funded position to, you know, seek out grants and awards. I think it's really hit or miss, and more miss than hit. And then when we do are successfully awarded, they are very small in dollar value. Now, the CARES Act, that's obviously a big one, 5.3 million. I think that's definitely an exception, not the rule. I think a good, you know, to give you a better sense of this, to require a single audit, which is a federal requirement when you receive grants and federal grants and awards, you have to expend $750,000 in a year. And that triggers a separate audit by our auditors, and also what's called a schedule of expenditure of federal awards, a CEFA report. And we have not had a single audit. I'd have to go back and look, but it's been a number of years where we have, and they've increased that requirement. It's now 750. It used to be, I think, 350. And that increased several years ago. So we're not, you know, for a town of our size, we're not hitting a lot of federal grants and awards. We're not being successful in those. Now, certainly this next year, we will need that. You'll see that the current fiscal year that we're in as we go through the audit process next year. But you know, that's part of the reason why we delayed bringing in the CARES funding, because I didn't want to be be subject to a single audit this year. Just a regular audit was fine. And then take all the CARES funding, dump it into the, receive it this year, and then we'll be ready for the single audit next year. But yeah, we do not receive a lot of grant funding.
So is it the department decides, or do they look at what's out there? It's all federal. Is it all federal funded?
It is primarily federal funded. Yeah, and I'm not worried about the Walmart grant or the, private foundation grant. I mean, those are so easy. I mean, they're not an issue. So I don't want to set that, that limit on those types of grants, because, administering those grants are very simple and easy, but efficient. But the federal ones are, they're bears to deal with. I mean, you hear the stories about red tape. It's true.
Kind of depends on what functions you have. If you have a housing authority, a big transportation, Tucson, city of Tucson has almost a couple hundred million in grants because they have, the type of functions where you can use a lot of grants. Police is another area that can get into a lot of grants. So mm-hmm. It depends on the functions you have and it's part of your city or town.
I don't know. Is this too limiting? I mean, I don't know a lot about them. Is the intent with this? I'm hearing the intent with this is we don't want to go after something that's going to cost more to do all the work with, than the money we're going to get. Am I hearing that right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a cost benefit proposition.
Okay. I mean, I would hate to discourage anybody from trying to secure more funding, right?
You have a number in mind, Jen?
I really don't know. I mean, I don't really know that much about this, but I mean, I would think if you think 15,000, there's got to be some justification to that, right? And if we don't have a whole lot of them, then it sounds like it's one of those things where it's a whole lot of work for not a lot of gain.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would like to go higher, but I wanted to start someplace and not incur the wrath of some departments that are used to going after little idly piddly grants, and now they're going to be precluded from doing so, but not understanding, what that entails in terms of the work and the effort put in by finance to comply and report on those grant awards. So
for your safety, David, I support 15,000.
Yeah, I'm inclined to let Dave live with 15,000 for the next year and then come back to us as this whole package will have to be updated and see what number he comes up with then.
Much higher.
Yeah, and I would over the next year, I would like to take a stronger look at this and actually back it up with some hard data. So it isn't just an arbitrary and capricious number that I'm pulling out of the air, but just full disclosure, that is an arbitrary and capricious number.
No, that's what I was going to suggest. My other thought was, or do you just exclude it and then do a little study and then add it next year?
Yeah, I think, if we exclude it, then it kind of defeats the purpose of the policy.
I meant exclude the whole policy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we need something. I think we do need, we need to deal with the indirect costs, the grant guidelines. I think the grant program determination, I think those are all, or grant program termination. I think those are all, obviously I included them because I'm biased, but I think they're good policies to have, something that we haven't had historically. And now we can address it and maybe strengthen it moving forward as I gather more information.
I guess the only thing I would ask would be some kind of literally 5-minute back of the envelope thing that says, there's five reports required. It'll take somebody, you know, 20 hours to do them, whatever it is, some super top level quick and dirty number that says, gosh, it costs, you know, at least $12,000 to administer, you know, just if somebody asks, right? Mm-hmm. Super top level. Okay, well, then that kind of doesn't make sense. Or, you know, it costs $20,000. Well, then that for sure doesn't make sense. But some super top level, you know.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that analysis is going to require me and or someone in my staff and my department to actually go through and say, okay, here's the grants and awards that we've been awarded historically. You know, the CARES Act one, I'll say that is the it's not just an abnormality in terms of the amount of the award. It's also an abnormality in terms of the level of and then I get it. It's going to get scrutiny and auditing and all those compliance, you know, or the checking pieces that are necessary. But in terms of the looseness of that, it does not or has not functioned like a typical federal award in terms of the quarterly reporting and the compliance requirements and everything else. It is, you know, I think it'll get the appropriate amount of scrutiny eventually, but to date it has not. I'll just leave it at that. That's a pass through again through the state governor's office, and they have required certain reporting and whatever, but it's it has not functioned like a typical federal award has. And part of that is, you know, is purposeful in terms of just trying to get the money out and the assistance out to governments and allowing it to be utilized as efficiently and quickly as possible. But this one's been a different one. I mean, a lot of times you'll see, you know, subrecipient monitoring, which this has a piece of that. A lot of times you'll see, where you're not supposed to, supplant. There's supplanting requirements with a lot of federal awards. So if you have the resource budgeted already in your budget and it's included in there, you're not supposed to utilize the federal award to supplant that and then free up those resources. There's none of those requirements with this CARES Act funding, which is very, very interesting to me. It's been an interesting one just to watch that unfold, and we're grateful for it certainly. But it's the anomaly of all federal awards that I've seen. So,
okay.
Any other questions, comments on grants?
No, I have none.
Okay. The last one is accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. Again, this one, I think some of this is included in our current policies, but talking about report submission to GFOA, our CAFR, our budget, et cetera, selection of auditors, that we're going to utilize generally accepted accounting principles, talks about audit completion and single audits and all of that. And really that is dictated by, again, ARS. I could include that ARS in there. Any other comments, feedback on this one? It's really kind of broad, but I think it's necessary, kind of hits on several components and pieces of existing policy, but kind of sticks it out on its own. I think it was mostly included in section D of the financial reporting policies, if I remember right. Yeah, of our current policies. So not a lot new here, but needed to be included, I think, in the policy.
So what's the external and the other is internal? Is that sort of the differentiator between the two reporting policies?
Yeah. So Commissioner Salverson, primarily that's the case. I think I would argue the budget is an internal document. I think it's just, you know, what we're trying to hit at here is just best practice. You know, some of this is certainly external, talking about audit completion, CAFR, et cetera. I would say the budget's, you know, primarily an internal document, although it does get submitted to GFOA for for their award. You know, we're trying to establish the standards for best practices as to these documents, when they're completed and where they go.
Do you want to add your expenditure limitation report to the ones reviewed by the auditor?
No.
Because it'll be reviewed by the auditor.
Yeah.
Your report's going to be a lot more extensive now than before.
You know, we... I'm thumbing back to the expenditure policy because I included the uniform expenditure reporting system in that policy, 6.0. And I don't want to duplicate.
That's fine.
I'm wondering, does it belong? Where's the best place for it?
Doesn't matter. I mean, in that reporting area, you talked about reports that are reviewed by the auditor.
Mm-hmm.
And that report is reviewed by the auditor. So wherever you'd like to put it, doesn't matter.
Let me ponder that one. You know, I do address it in audit completion. The CAFR, the Alternative Expenditure Limitation Report, and Single Audit Report.
So you decide.
So Commissioner Mason, so what are you seeing that it ought to be addressed differently or?
No, I think, you know, I just saw the paragraph where it was, was it already in there? Maybe I just missed it.
Yeah, it's in 3.0.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Any other comments?
I just have a weird comment. So the title of this, Accounting, Auditing, and Financial Reporting versus 1.0. Oh, here, we can just go to the table of contents. Well, let's see. 1.3, you say Fiscal Monitoring and Reporting, but the actual title of it is really... Oh, it is Fiscal Monitoring and Reporting. Okay. Maybe Fiscal Monitoring and Internal Reporting. So you say financial reporting, but you do financial reporting in 1.3 also. I don't know. I'm just being kind of picky about just understanding the difference between the two sections.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right on, Commissioner Salverson. One is really dealing with the internal reporting that we do internally. Yeah, it does get pushed out externally as well to you and to the council.
Right.
But generally, the intent is that it is an internal mechanism, reporting mechanism for monitoring our finances.
Right.
The other one is really dealing with external. Specifically the CAFR document, and I would, you know, I think the budget is I'm parsing here. I think the budget is primarily an internal document as well, but it does get reported externally. So,
right.
So are you going to change 1.3 then to Fiscal Monitoring and Internal Reporting and 1.13 to Accounting, Auditing, and External Financial Reporting?
Thoughts on that change?
I mean, that would define it a little bit better.
Sure, it tells what you're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, David?
I'm open to that change. I mean, it's pretty straightforward and simple. I have no no concerns with that change at all. It does define it a little bit cleaner, but I think there's, you know, there's just naturally a little bit, I'm trying not to obviously, but naturally a little bit of overlap between.
Yeah. But really one, the intent, I feel like 1.3, the intent is for the staff and us and whoever else to kind of get a pulse on where we are. You know, it's really your monthly reviews.
Right.
And then the external is more to just make sure that we're in compliance with what we say we're going to do.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, the focus is for outsiders to read the documents, see what's going on.
Right. And then one, maybe you have this in here also. One last thing, and I think you do have it in here, is when, you know, annually, is there some process for reviewing this? This whole thing. I think you have that in 1.3. Reviewing this entire document, right? I think you're going to put the review months in and all of that. Compliance with, I guess you got that in there.
That's a good question. Should your opening paragraph on this thing indicate that this should be reviewed annually? I thought I saw it somewhere, but
on 1-13?
No. The whole budget,
so 1-3 says financial, are we talking about financial policies?
I'm talking about the whole package.
Yes.
1-3 policy 3.0 says financial policies will be reviewed annually by the town council and updated, revised, or refined as deemed necessary. Policy statements adopted by the council are guidelines, and occasionally exceptions may be appropriate and required. However, exceptions to stated policies will be specifically identified, and the need for the exception will be documented and fully explained.
So are you suggesting that part go into the first paragraph instead of as a...
Well, I think your intent, is it not, Dave, that this entire package be reviewed on an annual basis.
That is correct.
I assume by the Banking and Finance Commission, and then approved by the town council.
Correct.
So the question is, where does that statement go?
Right.
And since you have this thing starting out with guiding principles, maybe it belongs up in there somewhere.
I see where you're going with that, Mr. Chair. I think I still would want that as a policy statement, not just a principle.
Yeah.
So and I don't want to duplicate, but I do think that it's important that we have an annual review of the financial policies. And so to me, that ought to be the standard. That ought to be a policy statement in and of itself. So the question is, where does that belong?
So right now you think it's in 1.3?
It is. It's 1.33 or something. Let's see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, just financial policies are reviewed annually.
So I guess maybe that's falls under fiscal monitoring, not necessarily reporting. The first two are kind of reporting, right?
Right.
This is more of a, are we complying with what we...
I'm thinking that this annual review is much broader than what's being defined here under 1.3. Am I wrong?
Well, you could, to your point, is to make it its own separate policy at the end. So 1-14 would be annual review. And that way it sticks out like a sore thumb. It achieves what Dave's trying to do, and that is to have it be prominently displayed as a policy, and it's not hidden away in another policy.
I'd maybe make it first. And I also think what you want to do, I think, would you want to have the everybody that's in the finance department has a maybe a say in this, and just that would ensure compliance, right? If they, you know, make sure that they read it at least once a year. And, you know, if there's something that is not being done, either it gets changed or it gets done, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, the other thought I did have was too, was just relooking your order. Cause I think we added those last couple on at the end. Maybe that's fine, but I, you know, just kind of making sure this is the order that you want it in, right? Does that make sense?
So just so I'm clear on that point, Commissioner Solverson, so are you talking about the order in this fiscal monitoring and internal reporting policy or
no.
The policies overall?
No, the whole thing. So if you look at the table, if I look at the table of contents, does that flow?
Gotcha.
I'm not sure if it flows. There's just a couple things you may want to move in just so that it's got the format is, you know, the order is logical.
Sure. Thank you for that clarification.
The bad end, where would you put the annual review of the policy?
I prep it first.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I would. You know, define it. Maybe you define it and it's a guiding and it gets reviewed annually. And, you know, I don't know if you want to, you know, do something where you want to make sure that anybody who has anything to do with finance is aware of these. So for example, some of these may be applicable to different departments, right? Now, every department doesn't care about your fiscal monitoring, but the departments that have capital should mm-hmm. be reviewing that one. So maybe you put that in your, where you have, I think at the top you had something like who's responsible for it or who it pertains to or something like that. Maybe it's not just finance, but maybe like, you know, all department leads or something like that.
You have a place in the heading where you have
rights
to, don't you?
Yeah.
Of each policy?
Yeah. Cause, and then maybe you make sure that they review that once a year. So then you're never, you know, yes, they all know how capital expenditures works and they know where to find that policy and that sort of thing. Because you got a lot in here. It's much more, so much more robust.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
This is why it's taken us months to get through it.
I think you've got a good document here.
I agree.
So tying this back, just so I'm clear, because I don't, you know, again, I don't really, I mean, we could revisit this in December, but do we want the compliance with the financial policy statements? Is that its own separate heading, its own separate, you know, just so it really is, it comes out, it's not buried, not to say that it's even buried, but it's not included in fiscal, maybe that's not the right place for it. Do we want to kind of highlight that and bring it out separately, or do we think that it's good as is? I did hear the comment on the restructuring or the order of the overall policy document. You know, I which, you know, I think my challenge with that is I'm not sure what order to put things in. Obviously, you want to kind of keep maybe debt and expenditures together and capital, because they're all dealing with kind of the expenditure liability section, either the P&L or or balance sheet, keeping the revenues and the receivables kind of together. I'm not sure where, I guess pension funding as well, that would be an outlay. That's not an inflow. So maybe keeping that fund balance, maybe kind of structuring this as the balance sheet, keeping the directed policies maybe first, and then dealing with liabilities and fund balance and so on and so forth as your financial statements would display. I just trying to think about this, talk my way through it as to what the, and then where do fiscal monitoring and reporting and some, and accounting, auditing and reporting, those are more like reporting type policies. Should they be at the beginning or the end? What's the proper placement of those?
I put them at the end.
I put them at the end too.
Yeah, okay. No, I think you're thinking about it completely the right way.
And I take the statement 3.0 and the fiscal monitoring and internal reporting section, put it into the top paragraph, or make it its own paragraph at the very top. And then the annual review of policies, I'd make 1-1, and then just redo the numbering and in your ordering section for the rest. So that would be my opinion.
Okay.
And what does everybody else think?
That's fine.
Yeah, I think that works.
Okay, I can do that.
I really think you've got a robust set of policies here.
Yep.
And I think that everybody within the town council or wherever would have easy access to see what this thing is. And I don't think it's necessarily, in terms of reordering it, is a priority. It's just reordering on the basis of kind of linkage associated with a balance sheet or a P&L statement type and reporting system.
So do we need to make a motion on this to the council, or?
Well, I'm assuming what you want, David, is a motion from us to approve these policies and send them forward to the council for council approval, correct?
That's correct, yes. And obviously there's a number of different items, which I think I've captured.
Can we trust you?
Through our discussion, whatever amendments. So, I think, it's up to you whether you trust me to adequately deal with those before it goes to council, or whether you want to see it one more time, kind of in a final form or not.
Well, I think I would recommend, Mr. Chair, that we let David proceed with the changes that he got tonight. I don't know what the town council's schedule is to see this. That's been determined, but I think that having a motion made tonight would be appropriate if we want to agree. And, the town council is going to get their bite at this apple.
Right. That's true. If we do too much, we're kind of tweaking, fine tuning it, and, they're going to have their comments as well, right?
Right, I would think. And so, I think we should move this forward. If the town council finds that there's issues that need to be further deliberated, they can be brought back to us so we can handle that and then make a further recommendation. But I think I gather from you, David, that we want to get this train moving and to the council. So I agree with both Kathy and Jim that this has been a rather intricate piece of work to get this all put together. And David, let me just say up front, thank you so much for all of this work. You really have put a lot into it. I would be willing to go forward with a vote of support to recommend it to the town council.
So do we need a motion then, right? So right. Motion to recommend that we forward this to the town council for their approval.
I included a couple suggested motions. Obviously, you're free to do whatever suits your needs and whatever your pleasure is. But I think the one that that kind of fits the bill would be to approve, if this is what you want to do, to approve the financial and budgetary policies as amended. That's what, obviously there's going to be amendments to what you're seeing in the draft this evening. I think I've captured everything, and I will certainly review and listen to the tape of this and just make sure, do a check, double check before I take this to council. Because I know that you're right, they will have their own questions, comments, but I would imagine one of those big ones is, have you captured all of the BFC's recommendations? And I want to be able to answer that in the affirmative with no hesitation.
So I hear that motion. Is that your motion, Kathy?
Almost, yes, that's my motion.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Can we have a roll call vote on this, Danielle?
Of course, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Lashford?
Yay.
Commissioner Mason?
Yes.
Commissioner Newell?
Yes.
Commissioner Salverson?
Yes.
Chair Beasley?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think it's been approved to move forward, and I would like to second the comment, David. I think you've done a great job with lots of sometimes conflicting comments and probably illegible information. So I think it's a good package. I really do.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, again, I've told you this before, but I appreciate all of the feedback, the comments. I've read it all. I've heard it all. Sometimes we've agreed to disagree on some of the finer points and things, but I think I just want to tell you all how much I appreciate your involvement in this, because it has been, this was a big process. This was a big project. And I think we're ending, hopefully we all agree, I think we're ending in a very strong position. This document has come a long ways from where it started. And there's been a lot of strengthening and things that I couldn't do it on my own, honestly. Just having your feedback, your wisdom, your input has really added so much more to this document, and so I am most appreciative of all of your time and efforts in participating in the process.
I think the benefit here of this commission is that you've got a lot of people with different disciplines that can contribute in varying degrees to each one of these different sections. And so I think this shows that this thing works.
For sure. Don't disagree.
Great.
Good.
Is Councilman Nicholson on the line for a council liaison comment?
No, Mr. Chair.
No? Okay. Then I think we are at the future agenda items question. I need to ask a question here. What do we have scheduled for our December meeting, which is fairly late in the month.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, the only, well, there'll be the normal review and approval of the meeting minutes from this evening. We'll do another, probably another, well, I don't know if we'll do a financial update or not. I'll have to ask Mary about that, because I know due to the timing of the, we only have one council meeting in December. And so I think the question is, are we going to do a monthly financial update? And I'm thinking, I know we're not going to do one for council because it's just too early. We won't have information. So the question is then, do we do something just for the BFC for you guys? I'm not opposed to doing that. Moving forward, and I don't know if this is, I need to, again, ask Mary about this, but moving forward, I think the big things on the agenda, obviously we've got budget season right around the corner, and we've got the five-year forecast that we'll be presenting to council on December 2nd. So that's something that we could present to you at the December meeting. But the thing that I'm thinking about that I think is going to require a tasking from the town manager is we need to go out for bid for our audit services. And I wanted to involve the BFC in that process in some form or fashion. So what that looks like, I don't really know, but I certainly have some ideas, but I kind of need to vet those through the town manager to make sure that we're both on the same page and then involve you all in that process as well. Cause I think that would be a worthwhile endeavor to have your input in the selection of our audit firm for the next 5 years.
Are we going to get a new PSPRS valuation report?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a good point, Commissioner Mason. Yeah, no, that should be coming in December as well. I don't know. Early December, hopefully, maybe late November. I don't know the timing of that. It kind of can vary. But whether that's going to be available or not in time for us, for staff to present that or provide information on it, I don't have a sense of that yet because that's out of our control, certainly. But if we do have it, if we can pull that report together and make some sense of it and present that to you, that would be another item that could potentially be on the next agenda.
Okay. It sounds like it could be a material meeting, or at least help us on a go-forward basis, because we're going to have a bunch of other stuff coming up starting in January. Okay.
There's plenty to do, which was why I was trying to push through to the best I could, but push through this policy stuff because there's a lot left. There's always stuff to do.
Let me just interject here for a second, Mr. Chairman. If we find out that these reports are not ready to come forward, are you suggesting that maybe we could forego a meeting in December since the council's not going to be meeting?
You're asking me, Jared?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, this commission has been meeting monthly or more, actually more frequently, since we were formed nearly 2 years ago.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that we continue to work on material information. But if we don't have to meet in December because we don't have material information or can't pass information on to council or it creates an undue work effort for the town on a make-work basis, then maybe we should entertain not having that December meeting.
Yeah, so I think that kind of comes down to David and the team feel like they need us in December. They should alert you. And of course we would be here. But if there is no need, then I would agree with you there. We shouldn't meet just to meet. David's got plenty of work, I'm sure, that he could be.
Yeah. So I guess I'll kind of leave that up to you and Ms. Jacobs. And let us know what the situation is. Does that work for everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else for future agenda items? If not, could I have a motion for adjournment?
Sure.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much, everybody. I think this was a meaningful meeting, and we certainly should be happy that we got an awful lot of stuff done over the course of the last several months.
Have a good Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you.
Stay healthy.